tomorrow, but we're done for today. If you missed the show, listen back on our free Global Player or the LBC app. You can stay up to date with the latest news and opinions. Put your news catchers in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio. Listen to a range of podcasts. Download the LBC app from your app store now. I'm done. James O'Brien, the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and here's a hat-trick of headlines for you. Act now to counter the problem of King Donald. I can't sugarcoat it. Trump's a deluded megalomaniac who's irreparably damaged the world order and increased the risk of war. And Trump crosses all lines. It's time to halt the danger by cutting off his global credit card. Two, I kid you not, from the Daily Telegraph. And one, from the Daily Mail. It would appear that reality has finally dawned in the minds of some of the boneheaded commentators in the history of humanity. What on earth would you do if you had been one of the people deploying that ludicrous phrase Trump derangement syndrome to describe those of us who could see clearly what was happening in plain sight almost every day? So, is it time to get psychological?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, President Trump will address the World Economic Forum in Davos later after insisting he'll work out a deal on Greenland. He's reiterated his plans to take the Arctic territory, but has played down concerns the move could break apart NATO. His trip to Switzerland has been delayed by an electrical fault which forced him to switch planes. Cabinet Minister Ed Miliband has told LBC calm dialogue remains the best way to solve the row over Greenland. I'm sorry, we can't bring you that clip. We will try and
do
that.
We've got to put all of our efforts
in the next hour. Elsewhere today, the Chancellor Rachel Reeves says 2026 will be the year the UK turns a corner despite a rise in the rate of inflation. December's figure rose to 3.4%, driven by price increases to alcohol, tobacco and transport. That's up from 3.2% in November. Speaking to LBC, the Shadow Chancellor, Sir Mel Stride, blamed the increase on what he's called the government's economic mismanagement.
Inflation's well above target, which of course is hitting people hard in their pockets, particularly the most vulnerable. And look, it's due to Labour's choices. They put up taxes on businesses, some of which is passed on to higher prices. They borrowed a lot of money, spent a lot of money, and stoked inflation that way.
Prince Harry's expected to start giving evidence on the third day of his privacy trial against the publisher of the Daily Mail. He's accused Associated Newspapers of unlawful information gathering. The firm denies the claims. The government is promising cheap loans for people to install solar panels, heat pumps and batteries in their homes. It's revealed details of its $15 billion Warm Homes plan. And Emma Raducanu has been knocked out in the second round of the Australian Open tennis. She lost to Anastasia Potapova in straight sets. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up a point at 10,127. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather, rain will clear northern areas, but showers in the far south will spread across the UK later in the day. A high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNC's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Where I feel, why did I introduce a TH into that word? I think it's a morning, I'm feeling quite reflective this morning. There's quite a lot to get through today. A little later, it's a sort of bottom heavy show. PMQ's at 12 o'clock. Keir Starmer in this country. Of course, he's taken several kickings lately for not being in this country enough, despite following a relatively, obvious schedule of international diplomacy, trying to do repair or at least shore up some of the damage done by previous administrations and of course, the dread B word. But I suspect he'll take a bit of a kicking today for not being in Davos, which is where the eyes of the world are turned. They might be equally unfair kickings, but such is the world that we inhabit. I don't know what on earth they'll talk about. I imagine Kemi Badenoch will go in very hard on Chagos and display quite a lot of ignorance, as much of the right-wing media and indeed the President of the United States have also displayed in a sort of desperate attempt to land some sort of punches. After that, Stuart Lee is in the studio. The finest comedian in the land will be joining us to talk about a residency at the Alexandra Palace in London, but also, of course, about what on earth satirists and comedians do when the world is utterly, utterly bonkers. And we'll also be catching up later in the programme with events in the High Court as and Prince Harry goes for a hat-trick of victories over the UK newspapers. Not that you'd know that he was 2-0 up in extra time by looking at most UK newspapers. And indeed, we may get on to journalists a little later in the programme. You heard me mention there in the introduction the curious case, the curious phenomenon of people paid for their opinions, people paid to understand and explain what is going on in the world, who up until relatively recently would use the phrase Trump derangement syndrome as an insult to direct at people who did understand and were explaining what was going on in the world. You can't be shocked by it because you've seen exactly the same thing happen with Brexit and Boris Johnson. It would be very hard to find anybody in the UK media or political establishment who was telling you that Donald Trump was a genius who hadn't also told you that Brexit would be brilliant and that Boris Johnson was a latter-day Winston Churchill. It's like a curious hat-trick of horrific ignorance, miscalculation, failure to do your job properly and complete contempt for observable reality. But I'm feeling reflective today. And part of the reason for that is because we are on hold. We are waiting. We are looking for the president's aircraft on radar screens and waiting for it to land, albeit a little later than scheduled after an electrical fault sent him back to DC. But you're looking now, I read you three headlines just before I came on air, and even I, who does this for a living, can't quite believe that they've appeared in the House journals for pro-Trump propaganda in this country. Two from the Telegraph, Act Now to Counter the Problem of King Donald, and Trump Crosses All Lines, It's Time to Halt the Danger by Cutting Off His Global Credit Card. And one from the Daily Mail, I can't sugarcoat it, but by the world's wrongest man, of course, but even a stopped clock can be right twice in a lifetime. Trump's a deluded megalomaniac who's irreparably damaged the world order and increased the risk of war. I don't know how you feel about this. I don't find personally any satisfaction in once again seeing that the relatively easy business of understanding what was going on around us and what would happen if you pressed that button coming to fruition. There's very, very, very little pleasure in being proved right. I'm talking about you now, not me. I'm very, very little pleasure in being proved completely right about something as significant as the collapse of the post-world order, the redrawing of all the rules regarding the West, because we have to live it. You know, it's great to talk about. It's not so good to live through. And we all have to live through it, whether we were or are seeing all of our well-articulated fears come true, or whether we are pretending that we'd never used phrases like Trump derangement syndrome to describe people who were doing their jobs infinitely better than we were. It's just one of those things. It's just one of those moments where, as with Brexit, as with Boris Johnson, as with Liz Truss, as with austerity, there's no pleasure in being proved right. There's no victory. There's no prize, whether real or not. You don't even get a FIFA Peace Prize for being right about all this stuff. You just have to suck it up. And so I don't quite understand anybody feeling celebratory about Donald Trump's ever increasing, ever accelerating descent into absolute hideousness, because however loudly you were shouting that it was going to happen, watching it happen is bad for you. It's bad for all of us. It's bad for the world. Mark Carney articulated this brilliantly yesterday, the first politician I've heard who really understood the dangerous siren lure of normality or normalcy bias. He really articulated that idea. You can't wait for things to go back to normal. Things aren't going. We may listen to some clips from that if you didn't hear it yourself. but it was really quite poignant to recognize the rightness of what he was saying while still suffering from a degree of the condition that he was describing. You sort of think it will be reversible, it will be undoable, but will it? I don't know. The question then is this, this morning. When historians of the future come to write about this extraordinary chapter in Western history, what will they write? I'd like you to help me construct a first draft of history. And there are two questions that I want you to focus on in different hours. In the first hour, we're going to do something that we've stopped doing because you can't really reason your way out of a situation that you haven't been reasoned into. But you still have to try. And it occurred to me on the way home yesterday that the historians of the future won't just be able to write under the chapters and the PhD theses and the textbooks dedicated to this period of American and Western history. They won't just be able to write, Donald Trump was mad, will they? Donald Trump was a narcissist. Donald Trump was a Russian stooge. Donald Trump was so desperate to avoid releasing the Epstein files that he invaded Greenland. I still don't think he's going to do that, but who knows what we will discover later today. You can't do that if you're a historian of the future. You can't just chalk up. You can't reach for one single, simple, however seductive it may be, explanation and leave it there. Historians of the future will have to come up with substantive and plausible explanations as to why this man does what he does. Why does he do what he does? His niece, Mary Trump, gave an interview to Andrew Marr last night in which she talked about how he has always been this person. The absolute tragedy or anomaly or aberration was giving him another go, giving him the second term. And that's going to be the second question that I ask you today. What on earth were these people thinking? Not so much the voters, necessarily, because, you know, contempt for the con man, compassion for the conned. I remember Emily Maitlis saying to me, long before the last American election, that the price of gas was going to be crucial, absolutely crucial in people's minds. I didn't really understand, far be it from me ever to question the wisdom of Emily, but I didn't quite get it. She was right. People don't vote, having listened to hours of careful and detailed analysis or having read textbooks dedicated to the big issues of the day. People vote often quite whimsically, quite mercurially and quite selfishly. So it's not so much the voters. It's the people paid to understand things. And the question of how they could have got things so wrong that we'll probably turn our attention to in the second hour. Think of it as an unhinged headline extravaganza. We'll have a little run through some of the commentary from some of the print journalists. It's harder to collate the broadcast equivalents, but some of the print journalists who have spent the best part now of half a decade being spectacularly and incredibly wrong about the biggest issue, the most important issues of our age. And none of them will face any censure because they're of the right. If you're on the right wing, you don't get punished for making mistakes. You don't get punished for being hideously wrong. If you're on the left wing, you may never work again. You'll be drummed out of town by the Daily Mail, even if you happen to work for the BBC. All right. You can fill in the gaps there. You know exactly who I'm talking about. So you have this curious dichotomy of mystery, this combination of mysteries. But I want to begin with Trump himself. We haven't done this for a very, very long time because it became, what would the word be? I became not pointless. It's never pointless. It just became unsatisfying, unrewarding. Explain to me why Donald Trump does what he does. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. It's not going to be like Brexit because they're not going to be able to cling to the idea that there is a decent Donald Trump, but he goes to a different school. It's one of the great ironies of Brexit is that the people who got everything they wanted can now spend the rest of their lives denying that what they got was what they wanted. But you can't do that with Donald Trump. And the two phenomena, the two political phenomena, go absolutely hand in hand, up to and including the role that Vladimir Putin played in inflicting them on former allies of each other, because we're not even that anymore. What, how do you explain? What is it? You can go psychological if you want, you can go political, but here is a man that torches friendships without a second thought, who doesn't understand the meaning of alliance or the meaning of trust. Lewis Goodall pointed out rather brilliantly yesterday that he genuinely can't grasp the notion that the Norwegian government doesn't control the Nobel Prize Committee. Because what is the point of power if you do not use it corruptly? So what would be the point of being the Norwegian Prime Minister if you didn't use it to dish out Nobel Prizes to people that you were trying to cozy up to? I'll tell you who's currently sitting on his so-called Board of Peace. And you might, if you haven't been paying attention, not believe me. Because it is an assembly of individuals that are objectively responsible for pretty much the worst things that have happened on this planet in the last 5 years. Not all of them, but many of them get a seat on his Board of Peace. So what on earth animates him? What motivates him? What moves him? I don't know. But if I were to be writing a book in a year or so, say, for example, How They Broke the World, I'd have to come up with a rationale. It's not enough to talk about a sense of entitlement like you can with Boris Johnson or David Cameron. It's not enough to talk about a deep root of racism that makes him determined to rebrand society into a place where racism is acceptable like you can with Nigel Farage. It's not enough to talk about a slightly woolly belief that you can make the world a better place for everybody. Not that anybody would accuse Donald Trump of that, but it explains people like Keir Starmer and Ed Miliband. What on earth explains this man? So you sit down in, 5 years' time? Maybe less, maybe more. Should we say 10 years' time? God knows what the world will look like 10 years from now. And you are going to write an article, a chapter, or a book, whatever you prefer, or even a tweet. You can do it in a sentence if you want. In fact, you can text me to 84850. You will sit down and write about the motivations or the motivation of President Trump, President Donald Trump. What drove him to do the things that he did? And I tried yesterday, and I think that I was largely successful, to acknowledge that when I ask you a question that's really difficult to answer, it's very, very unfair of me to be impatient with you if your answer is in any way imperfect. I can't jump down your throat if I haven't got anything better to offer myself. So don't be shy about suggesting things that you think might be obvious, or suggesting things that you think might be a little bit left field. We took a call from Barbados yesterday, from Victoria, who was expressing, after a lifetime working in the bonds market, she was expressing a degree of surprise that the bond markets, that US bonds, had not wobbled more and that hadn't been targeted more by the people that Donald Trump himself is targeting. And you woke up this morning to read that the Danish pension fund has just sold $100 million of debt. That is not only an illustration of the quality of call, the caliber of call that we now expect routinely on this program. A bonds expert rings in to explain how bonds works and ends by expressing a degree of surprise that things hadn't happened that she was expecting to happen. And almost before she'd put the phone down and gone fishing in Barbados, the thing she was expecting to happen started happening. So, you know that. That is unfolding news. But in the context of why Donald Trump does the things that he does, don't worry about coming at it with, well, just do it. Just answer the question. 10 years from now, when we sit down to write an account of this period of history, and Donald Trump's utter hideousness, his unfitness for office, to quote the world's wrongest man, Daniel Hannan, who told us a while ago he was not going to do any broadcast interviews or journalism anymore, presumably as a form of penance, describes him as a deluded megalomaniac who's irreparably damaged the world order and increased the risk of war. You know that the oil tanker has turned around and it ain't turning back again anytime soon. There's no alternative Donald Trump that goes to a different school. His hideousness is now a matter of record.
people who use the phrase Trump derangement syndrome will probably be talking about something completely different for the next few weeks, pretending it never happened, just like they pretend they never tickled Boris Johnson's toes, and they pretend that they never told you Brexit would be a brilliant idea, or they pretend that there's no such thing as poverty in this country unless you're a middle-class parent complaining about VAT on school fees. But for the rest of us, who like to understand things and who care about each other, how do we explain why Donald Trump does and did the things he does and did? 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like. From real Octopus Energy calls.
Your customer service was tip top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
The customer service was really good.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at Five Oaks Audi. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play!
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me?
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn, right here in Surrey.
Yay, painting it!
Do something big. Work with small children. Tap the banner to get started.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
22 minutes after 10, and you'll be delighted to learn after some record-breaking monologues in the last couple of days. I'm all ears this morning. I just want to know what you think we will say to each other in 10 years' time in answer to the question of why did Donald Trump do the things he did? Tim's in Belfast. Tim, what have you got?
I think, James... Hi, good morning. We've seen over the last 40 years the development of an individualism in politics, summed up by libertarianism. And Trump will be looked at as the pinnacle of that. The move away from a society to which Thatcher said, you know, there is no such thing as society. And we're looking at that and we're starting to see the people getting individually more wealthy is better than society having a better health service. We're seeing the individual...
It's a suboptimal phone line, and I'm really interested in what you've got to say, so I'm rather than make you hurry up, I'm going to try and improve the phone line while we talk to Janet, who's in Ashton. Janet, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello. I've just been very, very conscious of what's been going on, James. I'm a history teacher.
Oh, gosh. Oh, perfect. Come on, then.
So I've looked at it. First of all, I'd like anyone who hasn't read 1984 by Orwell to read it. Because it's quite prescient. I think it was about 40 years too early.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's happening. And I think we misread America because we tend to think of America as being, you know, the democratic New York, San Francisco. It isn't that. It's a great raft across who will vote for him, whatever. They don't seem to realise he's not actually acting for them. He's acting for him. Is a total dictator.
That you're moving into second question territory a little prematurely. So in terms of how we let him do it or how people couldn't see
at the end of their own noses. You're obviously right. And that point about Emily reminding me a while ago now that petrol prices would probably be more important than sexual assault allegations or the Epstein files when it came to people casting their votes has obviously been borne out by reality. But do we know, or if you're still teaching history in 10 years, what do you think you'll be telling the class motivated Donald Trump personally, politically?
I think it's hyper-capitalism, really. It's personal greed. He's from a very privileged background. He's never really had to do anything for himself.
Mm.
And he's never had anyone say, I listened to his sister on the Andrew Marr.
Niece.
And, oh, his niece, I'm sorry. But she was saying nobody's ever said no to him. And it seems as though he has a stranglehold on a country that is supposed to be the beacon of democracy. And he doesn't know what democracy means.
So we're going to go with greed, just pure greed. I mean, because there's lots of people who've grown up in very privileged circumstances. Yeah, there's of lots course. Of people that nobody has ever said no to. Brooklyn Beckham. he's got, and you know, I mean, privilege and wealth and entitlement are all going to be head turners, aren't they? They're all potentially going to corrupt people's integrity, but there's more.
People let them, can't
yeah, but
they?
There's more here. There has to be more here. He has to be possessed of something more than mere greed.
I think he's a megalomaniac, don't you?
What does that mean? Because so does Daniel Hannan. I bet you don't agree with him about much, do you? But here you are, both using the same word. What do we mean by megalomaniac? Somebody whose universe extends no further than their ego.
I think it's a messianic sort of syndrome, isn't it? You know, I'm bringing peace to the world. That's a joke. And, there's nobody can stop me because I am what the world needs.
Yeah, now, this is it. Yes, this is what fascinates me, actually. Yes. And this is what I hadn't realised fascinated me most, is that he believes his lies.
Oh, yes, he does. Absolutely.
He honestly believes he's stopped 8 wars.
Yeah. Yes, I know.
And the media still doesn't know quite how to handle it. It has to call them untruths. It can't really call them lies. And the Times this morning says Donald Trump, who claims that he has ended 8 wars. So that's why it's more than greed. Because you can be really, really greedy, but you still know that a spade's a spade. You can be really, really greedy, and you still know that you haven't ended 8 wars. But he honestly believes that he has done these things. That's the bit, I think, that's where historians and psychologists are going to have to collaborate together.
Yeah. I mean, I think he is mentally unstable.
For sure.
But I've also had this thing for ages about him, since the first time, that I think he's a stooge for Russia, and I can't get that out of my head.
It's Occam's razor now. I never dismissed it, far from it, and I think that Russian interference in referendums and elections will be something that historians of the future will be absolutely goggle-eyed at our failure to properly investigate and prosecute. But, I mean, Occam's razor says, why on earth would he do things that Russia loves and his allies hate? And one obvious answer is, of course, because Russia is telling him to. And that word compromat, which Christopher Steele, of course, introduced into our vocabulary, gets bigger almost every year. When you're teaching history, how much attention do you pay to psychology? I can't remember. It's a very long time since I did my A-level in Byzantine era.
It's very, very difficult these days.
Of course it is.
I've actually stopped teaching now. I'm doing tuition, but
okay.
It's so much work into exams, James.
Oh, okay. Well, don't open that Pandora's box. I mean, in terms of big picture stuff, when we weren't just becoming exam factories, because I think a lot, I mentioned this on Monday, and it always makes me chuckle at my own ridiculousness. I think a lot about Henry VIII, Janet, and the way that we were taught as children about Henry VIII, as if he was a sort of cross between Rambo and the late Queen, you know. We didn't discuss the fact that he was obviously bonkers, and he was obviously a syphilitic psychopath.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Right. So we do that. We would do a little bit of psychology.
Oh, yeah, I think we would now, yes.
And with, I suppose, with Hitlers and with dictators and people, psychology has to be taken into account. I guess if a leader is sane and rational, you don't need psychological analysis. So there's an imbalance there. You only bring psychological analysis into the picture when a leader is insane and or irrational. Narcissistic, megalomaniac, whatever it may be. There's a great line. In fact, one of the Telegraph writers uses it. I used it a few months ago, but I attributed it to the wrong writer, about fascism coming first slowly, then quickly, which is paraphrasing something that Hemingway wrote about bankruptcy. It's the same, I think, with this acknowledgement of Donald Trump's absurdity, his idiocy, his insanity. It's almost as if it's happened in the space of a 48-hour window for all the people who previously resisted it. And that's something we may move on to in the next hour, the question of how anybody could have been... Imagine using the phrase Trump derangement syndrome, for example, this year. How much attention would you be paying to reality? How much attention would you be paying to the news? How bent would you be, sort of morally and intellectually, to still be looking at what was happening in plain sight and thinking, yeah, it's the people criticising him that I'm going to go for? Absolutely extraordinary. 10:30 is the time. Dominic Ellis, how's your headlines?
The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, says Britain will not be buffeted around by American tariff threats as part of its pursuit of Greenland. President Trump will address world leaders in Davos later as tensions continue to rise over the Arctic territory. Separately, the Chancellor says 2026 will be the year the UK turns a corner, despite a rise in the rate of inflation. December's figure rose to 3.4%, driven by price increases to alcohol, tobacco and transport. And Prince Harry is expected to start giving evidence on the third day of his privacy trial against the publisher of the Daily Mail. He's accused Associated Newspapers of unlawful information gathering, which it denies. LBC weather. Rain will clear northern areas, but showers in the far south will spread across the UK later. A high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC. When you're
smiling. Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming tourists, cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sun Life Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £500 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet. Get out there. Select the dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
When you're cozied up on the sofa. When the drama's got you totally hooked. When you're completely engrossed in what's about to happen. Hey, did you eat all these?
Oh, sorry. Didn't notice.
Go on. There's more in the kitchen. Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, so you can make the most of those long, dark nights. Search TV licence together.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw. It's a very personal draw, so you think of a personal way to spend £1 million.
I would hire a hype man, so everything I do would suddenly be epic.
It's a lucky day, and you win the birthday draw. So...
let's go, Cap. Cut cheese bagel for lunch.
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search The Birthday Draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
33 minutes after 10 is the time. I'm equally fascinated by the people who fell for it as I am by what they fell for. But for the avoidance of doubt, the first bit of the programme today is dedicated to the question of what they fell for. What motivated Donald Trump? What drove him? I mean, some obvious suggestions, megalomania, greed, but again, it doesn't go all the way. The world is full of greedy people, but they don't believe their own lies. That's a psychological dimension that you can't ignore. He truly believes he deserves a Nobel Prize. He truly believes that he stopped 8 wars. You know, he's just Benjamin Netanyahu, a man widely considered to have committed genocide, not just by human rights organisations, but by international courts, is sitting on his board of peace, having killed, still unknown, tens of thousands of Palestinians, or presided over the killing of unknown. Vladimir Putin is going to sit on his board of peace. The man is... I used to use Bond villain as a... I used Bond villain to describe Elon Musk on Have I Got News For You about 10 years ago. Good God, I had no idea what was coming. But I used to use Bond villain as a figure of speech, almost, to describe people that were doing crazy things but who believed what they were doing, as opposed to people who were doing it to disrupt or doing it for fun. Or you can't tell me what Elon Musk believes, apart from the sort of white supremacism. But Trump, he believes all the madness that he comes out with, and then the next day he doesn't believe it anymore. I don't think he knows that he signed off on the Chagos deal that he was attacking Keir Starmer for yesterday. I don't think he knows that if Americans don't agree to it, it doesn't go ahead. I don't think he knows what it is, because he was talking about us needing money when we're paying money to ease the handover, to sort of, if you like, grease the passage of the legislation from a Mauritian point of view. So what on earth drives the man? 03456060973. And I worry sometimes that you don't share my attitude to Daniel Hannan. You possibly don't even know who he is, but he, and the reason I reserve particular animus for him is because I've sat on a book panel jury once and gave him an award for a book because he seemed sensible. And it was one of the people, why I harbour personal animosity towards him is because of embarrassment. He was one of the people that made me think, well, maybe Brexit isn't going to be that bad because he's not stupid. Maybe Brexit isn't, a bit like Michael Gove, maybe Brexit isn't going to be that bad. Maybe I'm wrong about this. There have been moments in the last year where I've had the similar attitude to Trump derangement syndrome. I've heard people say it who I presume know what they're talking about and spend as much time as I do reading newspapers and listening to programs and watching things and reading books. And I've heard them use this phrase. And I thought, well, maybe we are the mad ones. Maybe Trump isn't all that. Maybe I'm, and then you suddenly just remember that litany of hideous conduct, that litany of egregious behaviour, both personal and political. And you think, how can anybody think that the people criticising Trump are the ones that they should be coming for? And I can't believe quite how quickly it's all fallen apart. We're probably now in the week when the only person left wearing his little MAGA hat and drinking soda out of a straw at his Florida beach house will be Dick Littlejohn, the resident jester at the Daily Mail. Everybody else is abandoning the project at a rate of... No, I'm exaggerating. Of course they're not going to abandon the project any more than they'll admit that Liz Truss was wrong, that Boris Johnson was a catastrophe, or that Brexit was a bloody disaster. They can't admit that they're wrong. So should we actually be praising Daniel Hannan this morning for being the biggest hypocritical idiot on the planet who's actually prepared finally to tell the truth, unlike all the hypocritical idiots on his side of history and on his side of Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss and all stuff? I don't know. But I do know this. I'm talking too much. Ned's in Cambridge. Ned, what drives Trump?
Good morning, Mr. OB. No, Hannan is an idiot, so don't worry, I've got you that. All right?
Go okay? On. Yes.
You've got me there, mate, no problem at all. So I've been mulling on this for a little while. It's a little bit simplistic, but it fits.
That's fine.
And it inspired me. There was a caller into Ali Mirage's show the other week, and you know, Donald Trump is a businessman, right? And it's like, oh, well, this is the best thing since sliced bread, because he'll revolutionise politics and what have you. But if you think of it, right, what do business people do? So they come up with a product or a brand, and then they go out and have this brand, they get it made, they have suppliers, which they constantly hammer for getting prices cheaper, then it all goes to profit and loss.
Yeah.
But you don't have any, this is where it gets interesting, you see, you don't have allies in business, you just have competition after a certain point. And then once you get to competition, all you're into is like takeovers and buyouts, and then collecting all the golden baubles for the boardroom and maintaining that brand. And I thought, that's how he sees the world. That's all he's ever known, because he's grown up in that business that was given to him. So everything is a board.
But again, there's loads of people. There's loads of people we could say that about.
There's loads of people who inherited wealth, who inherited business. I dispute the businessman analysis. I think he's closer to a mafioso. I don't think he's a businessman in a conventional sense. And I guess to sell rubbish like places at his university or his ludicrous freezer aisle steaks while claiming that they're cordon bleu cookery or fine educational establishments, maybe the best sellers of tut are people who actually believe that their tut is beautiful. Maybe that's what we take from your analysis, this idea that what makes him powerful, for want of a better word, is actually the thing that makes him weak in the eyes of so many observers. When he sells this stuff, which is absolute toot, absolute toilet, he genuinely believes it's incredible. And that's how he manages to sell it to people, including himself, up to and including himself. He believes he's incredible, and he manages to persuade other people that he is, when the reality is so obviously the opposite.
Absolutely, I reckon that. And also, he's constantly been selling everything. He's got a million failed businesses under his belt.
Six bankruptcies, I think. And he's the only person I'm aware of who managed to run a casino that went bankrupt.
Correct. And then we add into, obviously, his terrible character flaws, which we all know about. And I think you've got a really toxic mix. You've got a man here who believes in absolutely everything that he comes out of his mouth.
That's the key bit. I think that is... And again, after all these years of talking about it, it's amazing to stumble into something that feels fresh. He believes... And that only really hit home with me with the wars. And, of course, with the election. I just presumed he knew he lost the election, but his ego wouldn't let him admit it. But he thinks he won it. He genuinely thinks he won it.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you've got a massive brand like that, and that's all you've got, I mean, he's so protective of it. He's, you know, bankrupt all the time. He's gone, the banks won't touch him, so he goes to Russia to go and get his money.
True.
I mean, that is, if he's been close to having nothing so many times, you know, he has to keep going, you know, to keep that brand going. Because what else does he do? You know, it's got his name on the building.
Yeah.
You know, I'll start a grocery business.
No, moving forward. And something is tied up in his psyche. That needs this. It's a bit why he sticks gold leaf on everything and marble on everything to mask the essential worthlessness in his core. He dresses himself in grandiosity. He dresses himself in ludicrous claims. You know, the claims that he makes about himself are extraordinary. I want you to thank you, Ned. And we've got Tim in Belfast on a better line. There's one phone line free currently, if you're quick. I think this is a fascinating question. It's funny, isn't it? I just glance at my inbox, and a couple of you are referencing Mary Trump's interview with Andrew Marr last night, which I mentioned a moment ago. And we were planning to play it at precisely this juncture.
Donald is exactly who he has always been. I think the problem we're facing now, and certainly have faced in the last year, is that thanks to some deeply misguided Americans who decided to put him back into power, a corrupt, illegitimate majority in the Supreme Court who gave him an imperial presidency, and a feckless, weak Republican Party that has completely ceded its constitutional duties, Donald is not bound by anything anymore. And he's also realizing unconsciously that all of the power, all of the money he's getting from corrupt corporations and from grifting off the American people isn't enough to fill the black hole within him. So now he's trying to do that by stealing other countries. It's quite alarming. And you're right. It has been an exhausting, demoralizing year.
I like that. You know, as someone who has some experience of therapy, that the idea that hurt people, but she calls it the black hole inside him. I think we talked earlier in this program about the emptiness of his soul. If I do this, I will feel what? I will feel warm. What they're searching for, these men, and it's as true of Boris Johnson as it is of Donald Trump, it's true of Dick Littlejohn, it's true of all of the people who have dedicated entire careers to cruelty and being wrong. What they're really searching for is care, that their younger selves were not looked after properly. It happens a hell of a lot in boarding schools, but their younger selves were not looked after properly, so they're searching for a sense of being looked after. When Mary Trump talks about a black hole, what fills it is care, concern, love. But what you end up believing is that you can fill it with adulation, you can fill it with achievement, you can fill it with success. So you're very driven, these people, usually, but not always, men, are very, very driven because they're desperately trying to fill what Mary Trump there describes as a black hole. But the black hole is created by absence, and the thing that is absent
is the thing that so many people don't realise they're so lucky to have in their lives, which is the child being cared for, the child being looked after, the child being protected. A child is not cared for. A child is abused emotionally. A child is abandoned. A child is not loved, not cared for. The black hole created will define their entire life. And you can see it in public life. You can see it in your personal life. You can see it everywhere. It just sometimes, with some people, assumes absolutely epic proportions. And that brings us to Donald Trump, whose black hole, according to his own niece, is of course unfillable. You could probably give him the entire world, and he'd still wake up in the morning with that gnawing sense of worthlessness that was put there, presumably by his father, by his parents, not by anything else. And the only person who can take it away is actually him. Nobody else can do it. No other world leader can do it. No voter can do it. No colleague can do it. No partner can do it. No child that can do it. The only person who can take it away is him. But it's probably too late.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I do think fundamentally Trump is not going to go so far as to invade Greenland. I mean, that would be absolutely off the scale, totally NATO-ending, continent-bending, awful. I don't know that he's there yet, but he is increasingly irrational. And we're going to have to do something.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Okay, do emails. Burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. New year, new plans, new deals. With up to £500 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 10:47. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I may have a what's it for you. Shall I do this as a missing word round or as a multiple choice? Have we decided? I'm going to do it as a multiple choice. The Standards Commissioner has just found this morning Nigel Farage guilty of committing how many breaches of the MP's Code of Conduct? Is it A, 7? Is it B, 8? Or is it C, 17? How many breaches of the MP's Code of Conduct has Nigel Farage been found to have committed? Is it A, 7? Is it B, 8? Or is it C, 17. This might be the easiest one I've ever done. So would you like to have a guess at how much money he has trousered from various organisations, including, I think, a bloke that's been done for I better just double check that before I say it out loud. But I think one of the people here may be a little bit dodge. But it includes doing things like promoting gold bullion, presenting on GBBs, the scrupulously impartial GBBs, and sundry other sidelines, which no doubt he just squeezes in while working tirelessly for the people of Clacton. But how much money do you think that he's trousered from so-called outside interests while supposedly being an MP? Is it A, £180,000? Is it B, £280,000? Or is it C, £380,000, which would be about four times the salary he gets for tirelessly working on behalf of the people of Clacton? So, question number one, how many breaches of the MP's code of conduct has the Standards Commissioner found Nigel Farage to have committed? Is it A, 7, B, 8, or C, 17? And how much money has he trousered through outside interests, including promoting gold bullion and presenting propaganda? Is it A, £180,000? Is it B, £280,000? Or is it C, £380,000? I'll probably forget to give you the answers to those, but that's fine, because they're blooming obvious. Tim's in Belfast. Tim, where were we?
James, you asked about what history will look,
yes,
look at Donald Trump. And I think they'll look at him as the pinnacle of a political movement that started with Reagan and Thatcher of individualism and neoliberal economics and libertarian politics, because he is the ultimate individual. He literally doesn't care what anyone else thinks. And that individuality...
But Reagan and Thatcher did.
Yeah, they did, but they started the process.
So he's like
that
the,
ended
can
up...
Can I say the B word? Can I say the B word to describe someone illegitimate on LBC, or is that word not allowed? He's like the love child. But like Edgar, like Edmund in King Lear, he's like he's twisted and bent, because libertarianism or at least that kind of capitalism of Thatcher and Reagan doesn't necessitate something as hideous as Trump. It might create it, but it doesn't render it inevitable.
But the growth of that has seen that it's more important for billionaires, individual billionaires, to have more money than it is for society to have enough money to fund a health service. It's more important to have tax relief for individuals for whom it makes literally no difference. They couldn't possibly need the money. But the whole process, the whole visibility that we're seeing of the right now is that it's all about the individual. And he is the ultimate individual. I mean, he doesn't care what the people around him thinks. He doesn't care about other world leaders think. But that fundamentally is why he was probably selected to be promoted by that political viewpoint. That if they put the extreme out there, then it almost covers up for everybody else. And
he's not a mystery. He's not a mystery at all. I mean, you're describing the framework in which his personal inadequacies could flourish. So
yes,
that libertarian, or which is a much maligned word, isn't it? I mean, it's quite a hefty and healthy philosophical tradition. But when you see people like Toby Young describing themselves as classical liberals or libertarians on Twitter, you realise the word has been completely corrupted by idiots. So you're describing the sort of post-idiot definition of libertarian,
yes,
which is, I believe in freedom of speech, but not for the people criticising me. I believe I should be able to say whatever I want, up to and including encouraging people to set fire to hotels full of humans, but I'm going to complain about Jo Brand joking about me and insist that she gets arrested. So it's like bogus libertarianism, whereby
yes,
people believe that they individually should be able to do whatever the hell they want, but everybody else should do whatever the hell they want as well.
Yes. So, I mean, he is, I mean, if you take the whole sort of funding of that and you look at the right-wing think tanks that you took on in your book, and you look at what they have been promoting.
Not just in my book, Timothy.
I also
gave them the mother of all spankings in an Ofcom ruling as well.
Yes. But the other side of what they're promoting is this total individuality, that nobody should be responsible for anybody else. And if you reach the pinnacle of that, you reach Trump, because he's not responsible for anybody else. He's not responsible for the government. He's not responsible for America. He's only responsible to himself, which is no responsibility.
Because lots of other people could fit into that category, but they are not as personally and as psychologically as hideous as Donald Trump. The two need to go hand in hand. And of course, the question of how you bring people with you is key as well. We'll move on to that shortly. And speaking of these lobby groups, guess where Nigel Farage was having lunch the other day? I don't know whether it was on the day or the day after that he was too ill to appear on the BBC that he was supposed to still be boycotting anyway. He had lunch somewhere called the Heartland Institute, which is dedicated to climate denial and even denying the scientific effects of passive smoking. So it's almost as if all of these planets can somehow align. But Tim's already mentioned my last book, so I won't bother drawing your attention to it myself. What I will do, however, is just remind you of what our old friends at the Institute of Economic Affairs are up to at the moment. No, I won't. I can't find the clip, but I shall find it shortly. This is from the New York Times, and it's fairly close to what we've been discussing this hour. President Trump has never been a man to ask what he can do for his country. In his second term, as in his first, he is instead testing the limits of what his country can do for him. A review by the editorial board, relying on analyses from news organizations, shows that Mr. Trump has used the office of the presidency to make at least $1.4 billion, which is yet more evidence of Nigel Farage's pound shop status, because he's only managed to trouser £380,000 from outside interests while ostensibly representing the people of Clacton. Money that has seen him breach the standards of the House of Commons on 17 separate occasions. And one of the people that gave him money was federally indicted in 2016 on 21 counts for conspiracy to commit money laundering, wire fraud, blackmail and extortion. He was denied bail by a judge who called him a serious flight risk and was detained in custody at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Chicago. He did a plea deal subsequently, which saw 20 counts dismissed in return for a guilty plea to a single count of wire fraud, in which George Cottrell, for that is his name, admitted to explaining various ways criminal proceeds could be laundered. And he has given thousands of pounds to Nigel Farage. Michael is in Greenwich. Michael, what drives Donald Trump?
Yeah, James, what I was going to comment on is I think what drives him is fairly clear, is the narcissism. I think what's more important is the power that he has is the power of the American people. And why do they continue to support him?
Go on.
Well, I'd put forth three reasons, if I could. There are three major shifts in America, certainly within our lifetime, and that people haven't adjusted to them. And he provides them with an adjustment. Basically, for example, women's rights. When Sandra Day O'Connor graduated from law school, first in her class at Stanford, the only job she could get was a legal secretary. Yeah. She ended her career on the Supreme Court. Pollution. When I was younger, growing up in the Midwest, the smell of pollution, they just said it's the smell of money. Lake Erie was dead. Mm. Nothing could live in it. And that was acceptable. And racism. You know, the deed to my parents' house, I read it, said this house cannot be transferred to anyone of African descent.
Whoa.
That was legal. It was culturally acceptable. And we're not talking about the Deep South here. All of these shifts have occurred, and people haven't had a chance to adjust to them. The law can change, but cultures change more glacially. And then economic downturn, and people say, well, why? Well, it's because we haven't maintained traditional values of, and what does Donald Trump say? Women in their place. We all know about his misogyny.
Yeah.
The deep racism, and there is no climate change. So he allows people, again, gives them license to ignore these shifts.
And you can have different sized slices from each pie, because, you know, a lot of people, I saw an interview with a Somalian woman yesterday who takes her passport with her, a Somalian American who takes her passport, a business owner who takes her passport with her when she goes to the bathroom because she's frightened of ICE, and she voted for Donald Trump. So she's obviously not voting for him for the racism, unless, of course, she was expecting other minorities to be targeted by him rather than her. But she might like the stuff about the pollution. You're going to be able to take like a buffet, like a smorgasbord. You're going going to be able to take a little bit of it, but not necessarily a lot of that.
And a lot of it's subconscious. It's people don't say, oh, gee, I'm going to vote for him because he's a misogynist. It's like, no, women somehow, these things have shifted, and they all go to identity. If I identify myself as having, well, I may not be as rich as I would like to be, but I'm better than fill in the blank, those people, black, Mexican, Somalians, we're humans, we should dominate nature, you know, this is our God-given right, or I may not be all that good, but I'm better than the little woman.
And this is why the woke conversation was so helpful to them, because they managed to describe people who are in favor of women's rights, in favor of a cleaner planet, and opposed to racism as woke, as if it was a bad thing to be. And that's why Trump embraced it so wholeheartedly.
I mean, he's just an opportunity. As his sister said, he's just a grifter. He saw these opportunities. And again, he was, I mean, we could go into his opponents and the structural, you know, space that allowed him even to run or to be successful. But that's not the point. The point is, why now, when people's obvious who he is, and it's been obvious for 15 years, if not longer.
And if it wasn't obvious, then A, January the 6th, and B, the pardons for the criminals guilty on January the 6th should have broken everything and didn't. Is this going to change anything? Is this week going to change? Because the rest of the world, I think, is wising up. The people who have cheered loudest for him on this side of the Atlantic are having a belated epiphany. Will it change much on the ground in the States?
I don't know. I keep hoping that it will, but I don't.
It's the hope that gets you, Michael. The despair is easy, but it's...
No, you have to have hope. You always have to have hope. I'd like to think that we as Americans, as you know, Lincoln said, you know, appeal to our better angels, that we have that possibility of... And freedom scares people.
Yes.
You know? And so if you get somebody who answers all of your inner fears... With one speech, but still, I think we could be better than we've been for the last 10 years.
And it would sadly involve Republicans, that process at some point. They're going to have to say enough is enough, or they're going to have to push back and object. And that, of course, is a frightening prospect for them to contemplate for obviously professional, political, and personal reasons. Michael, I love your calls to this program. I'm quite flattered that you make them, so thank you very much indeed once again. Michael, if you haven't worked it out for yourself as a former US diplomat, it is 11 o'clock. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, and he's in many ways teed up the conversation I want to have next, which is more about British commentators, actually, than it is about American voters. But how can people be surprised by what they're seeing this week?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, says Britain will not be buffeted around by American tariff threats as part of its pursuit of Greenland. President Trump is heading to Davos to address world leaders at the World Economic Forum. He's reiterated his plans to annex the Danish-owned island as tensions continue to rise over the Arctic territory. Speaking from Davos, Rachel Reeves pushed back on claims the UK hasn't been robust enough with the US.
The Prime Minister talks regularly to the US President, but also talks regularly and meets regularly with European and his Canadian counterparts. And it's because of that dialogue and those good relations that we managed to secure the first and the best trade deal with the US last year. And I'm confident that our approach will get us through challenging times.
Separately, the Chancellor says 2026 will be the year the UK turns a corner despite a rise in the rate of inflation. December's figure rose to 3.4%, driven by price increases to alcohol, tobacco and transport. A parliamentary watchdog has ruled Nigel Farage breached MPs' rules 17 times after failing to declare financial interests. The Commissioner for Standards found he didn't disclose payments of around £380,000 within a 28-day time limit. They included money he received from Google and Elon Musk's X Corporation. The reform UK leader has apologised for the delay in filing the accounts.
Prince Harry is due to begin giving evidence in his legal action against the Daily Mail's publisher. He's accused Associated Newspapers of unlawful information gathering. LBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott is at the High Court in London.
His belief that the paper paid private investigators to gather highly personal information about him illegally, using methods like phone hacking, surveillance and deception. The paper claims their methods were all entirely legal, and that it was the Duke's own friends and inner circle who were supplying information to the press.
Homeowners will be able to access cheap loans to install solar panels, heat pumps and batteries. Ministers say the Warm Homes Plan will help tackle fuel poverty but also cut carbon emissions. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 6 points at £10,120. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, rain will clear northern areas, but showers in the far south will spread across the UK later. A high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
I'm Linda, proud mum of Team GB's Emily Campbell. I know from watching my daughter through the years, the slog of training can get ugly. That's why Quaker is the perfect sponsor for Team GB. Because even though their porridge looks flipping ugly, it's the ugly stuff, the real stuff, that fuels us. Quaker, deliciously real, deliciously ugly, sponsor of Team GB.
This is LBC, from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 4 minutes after 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm going to indulge. I'm going to allow myself a moment of indulgence here, because I obviously work in a profession where many of the positions we pursue and explain together are unpopular, even as they remain popular in what you might describe as the real world, and should have been more popular and would have been more popular were it not for the fact that so much of the media is dominated by people who are wrong or corrupt. More on the Prince Harry trial against the Daily Mail a little later today. Just a quick word on that, actually. They finished earlier than expected yesterday, which was probably a tactic designed or undertaken in the hope of unnerving Prince Harry. He was expecting to give evidence tomorrow, and the Mail brought in their opening comments a little earlier, having submitted thousands of pages. Originally, the opening comments that they gave to the court came in rather earlier than expected, which probably was designed, perfectly reasonable behaviour, clever clogs, legalism, probably designed to put Prince Harry on the back foot, to take him by surprise, because he was planning to spend most of today with his lawyers. But I mean, my understanding of the situation is that that is a fairly ridiculous attempt at unnerving somebody who's been preparing for this moment for years, not just for a few hours. In many ways, he's been preparing for this moment for all of his adult life. Two down, one to go from Prince Harry's point of view. Beat the Mirror, the Murdoch outfit settled, much against the wishes of him and his fellow plaintiffs, because they really, really wanted everything examined in a court. But the Daily Mail are now in a position where everything is going to be examined in a court. But again, because we live in a country where almost all of the people paid to provide you with so-called journalism will be rooting for the so-called journalists in this case, some of whom were named in court yesterday. But if you are interested in an overview, then the reason why everything finished a little bit earlier than expected yesterday is pretty much certainly because they were hoping to put Prince Harry on the back foot and see him stepping into the witness box unprepared and unready, which I think would probably be a fairly massive miscalculation. But as media miscalculations go, that is nothing compared to what the massed ranks of the British commentariat has done in recent years with regard to Donald Trump. I'm going to run through a few. I will almost certainly miss some, and I'm going to do it in no particular order. A lot of it comes from the Daily Telegraph, which this morning carries two articles describing Donald Trump finally, accurately. In their defence, the columnists who've been given an entire page to share are relatively sane by the standards of this organ, the home of the unhinged headline. But Trump crosses all lines. I want you to hold these in your mind. Trump crosses all lines. It's time to halt the danger by cutting off his global credit card. which is, of course, what Victoria in Barbados was telling us yesterday, and act now to counter the problem of King Donald. That's where we are now. Where were we last year, or even perhaps in the first term? Trump will not destroy the rules-based order, the rules-based world order, wrote somebody called Janet Daly, who gets paid for her insights. It may not look like it, but Trump is saving Europe from itself, wrote somebody called Jake Wallace Simons, who gets paid for his insights. Donald Trump is saving Europe from itself, wrote Niall Gardiner, who gets paid for his insights. Trump backs Putin's land grab in Ukraine. That's just true, isn't it? I don't know how that one got through the net. Trump has just triumphed over the EU, wrote Matthew Lynn. Europe is a real doozy, is lurching towards tyranny. Pundits claim Donald Trump is crushing democracy while ignoring the real threat to freedom emerging across the Atlantic, wrote Douglas Carswell. Still getting paid for his insights. What a country we've become. What a country we have allowed ourselves to be turned into. Trump, wait for it, has been proven right about pretty much everything. That's by someone called Liz Truss, who I don't know if she is still paid for her insights. I imagine her sitting on a street corner offering them for free to anybody passing, or perhaps in return for a half-smoked cigarette. But she was at that lunch with Nigel Farage the other day, the one that was hosted by the climate deniers and the people who argue that even smoking, secondary smoking, passive smoking isn't bad for you. Here's a good one. Sherelle Jacobs, who gets paid for her insights, wrote, Trump has smashed the old world order. It won't be missed. We haven't finished yet, by the way. Am I alone, asked someone called Tim Stanley, who is paid for his insights, in admiring what Trump is doing? And to be fair to the fella, at the time he asked that question, the answer would probably have been no. Now, I probably just Tricky Dicky Little John, filing from his Floridan beach about how awful everything is in Britain, who would be agreeing with you that we should admire what Trump is doing. Trump's Liberation Day gives us the chance to now realise the dream of Brexit, wrote Nigel Farage, currently trying to explain to the Standards Commissioner how he managed to trouser £380,000 from outside interests while simultaneously being the MP for Clacton and failing to do the requisite paperwork. It's almost as if all the old ghouls and corpses of idiocy are emerging from the crypt of wrongness this morning. David Frost. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you David Frost. There's method to Trump's tariff madness, wrote another man that Boris Johnson put in the House of Lords. Kamal Ahmed, oh man, he used to be all right. Starmer should thank his lucky stars for Donald Trump. The 47th president is showing the PM how leadership works. I guess if you're signing up to write for the Telegraph, eventually you have to leave something at the door. Do we include Bernie Eccleston on this list? The former Formula One. It's a little tongue twister for you there, Keith. Donald Trump is the best thing that could happen to the world. Okay. I mean, he was very good with cars. Trump can save Brexit if we let him. Here's some words to strike terror into the heart of anybody with a functioning cerebral cortex. In the first of a new series on how to make Brexit a success, Douglas Carswell says... Yeah, I think we can leave that there. Oh, go on, have a guess who this one was. Trump's triumph offers a new blueprint for Britain. I spoil you with these. That's a new name to add to the list. Suella Braverman. I don't know if you remember her. She would have been paid for that, and she's still paid to sit and represent British interests in the House of Commons. If Trump succeeds in reinventing government, expect his plans to be the global blueprint, wrote somebody called Simon Case, who used to work for the British government. So, you know, the Kool-Aid reaches parts that other Kool-Aids have failed to reach. Here's one of my favourites, because this was something that Daniel Hannan accidentally admitted yesterday, in that eventually all they ever got out of it was enjoying the discomfort of people who were going to be proved right. Here is the Sherelle Jacobs person, who is presumably still paid for her insights. Smug liberals still don't get it. Trump is on the side of the people. Ah, oh, come on, Sherelle. Why couldn't you just have said woke and just make everything a little bit easier?
Poppy Coburn, me neither. It's time to become the 51st state of the US. The Daily Telegraph pay people to write this bilge. America is about to expose how authoritarian Britain really is. Somebody called Annabel Denham, who is not only still paid for her insights, she's been paid for them today in the Daily Telegraph, in the same pages. Here's one of their op-eds. This is the editorial that goes unbylined. Britain must look to America, not to failing Europe. I'm not done yet. What time is it? 11:13. This goes back to the immediate aftermath of the election, shortly after the election. Someone called Sam Ashworth Hayes, who presumably still gets paid for his insights, wrote, Britain must follow Trump and embrace mass deportations. Unwittingly making a case for at least one deportation, his own. Roger Kimball, America is so back. That's a hideous headline on every... Nobody over the age of 17 should be using language like... It's so back, man. America is so back, dude. America is so back. Oh, Lord. And on we go. Trump trade deal would be a Brexit triumph. Another one that nobody had the audacity to put their name on, so they stuck it on the op-ed pages. And there's a nasty bug, and it's spreading. Here it is, and it's spreading fast. Trump derangement syndrome! There it is. People who looked at what Donald Trump was, what he did, and what he was clearly destined to become, and decided that the problem, the real problem, was the people who were correctly describing it. And that is from Isabel Oakeshott, who I think has now moved to a country that has Sharia law, but is nonetheless still presumably paid for her insights. Is she going out with Richard Tice? I don't know who I'd be libeling, actually, if I incorrectly described those two as having been in a relationship. Which one would have the stronger case for libel in a court? There's a question for the ages. Hopefully we'll never have to find out. I haven't finished yet, although I may be losing control of my mouse. Back to Tim Stanley. Trump is already smashing the leftist deep state. And this is the British media. I know it's a bit of a pet hate of mine, and you probably ignore most of it, but this is why your mum thinks the things she thinks. This is why your daft Uncle Keith on Facebook holds the opinions he holds. They go further now, of course, on social media, but these are the seeds of destruction. British voters actually back Trump's policies. Here's the proof. And Abe Roger Kimball's back again. You remember him? America is so back. Donald Trump is a great man of history, says Roger, who looks like a thumb with painted on spectacles. Trump is the last chance to save the decaying West from terminal decline. Wait for it. It's the one and only. It's your favourite of mine. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you the godfather of the unhinged headline. It's Alistair Heath. Still the editor of the Sunday Telegraph, still getting paid for his insights and opinions. Trump is the last chance to save the decaying West from terminal decline. Okay. That's so good. We could almost do it twice. Then you get a new brand of journalism, Whisper It. So if you see Whisper It in a headline, it means this is absolutely bonkers, but my kids need shoes, and this is the bills that they want me to write. So you write Whisper It, but it's just possible that sanity is returning to US diplomacy. you got some other sort of political endorsements. Nigel Farage goes full Donald Trump, meeting him backstage at rally before vote, before America votes. Don't know who to feel sorriest for. Suella Braverman, congratulations, President-elect Trump, on your election victory. America is our closest ally. Your success is our success. At this time of global insecurity, you can... and then, of course, needless to say, Liz Truss. Congratulations, Donald Trump. Great news for the USA and the West. Let the fight back begin. This, it has to be mentioned, is somebody who is dedicated to opposing UK interests. And it was clear then, although it's even clearer now. Somebody called Boris Johnson? I mean, he must be important because they've stuck his comments in a headline. Huge congratulations to Donald Trump on his amazing victory. I have no doubt he will now set about making America strong at home and abroad. There's more. In fact, speaking of Boris Johnson, who the producer tells me used to be Prime Minister, he went to the inauguration a year ago. And at the inauguration, I think this is really important, he didn't touch the Bible, right? The swearing in, his arm was in the air. This is quite, I know you're looking at me as if, what's James going on about now? He didn't touch the Bible, but Boris Johnson filed copy for the Daily Mail,
which was supposed to be an eyewitness account. But Boris Johnson being Boris Johnson, he almost certainly filed it before it had actually happened. So the Daily Mail ended up with a front page feature stating, as the pulse of power surged from the battered Bible into the hand of Donald Trump, I saw the moment the world's wokerati had worked so hard to prevent. There's three things there worthy of mention. Number one, he didn't touch the Bible. So Johnson wrote that before it actually happened. Number two, to the best of my knowledge, the Daily Mail has subsequently done nothing to correct the record, because that would involve admitting an epic failure. And number three, wokerati. Again, what do you get out of this? Well, if we were to take Michael's analysis of what drives Trump, that hat-trick of horrors, misogyny, climate change denial and racism, you'd have to work out why Boris Johnson had such a problem with people who are opposed to misogyny, who are opposed to racism, and who are opposed to climate change denial. Again, as I said, it's a buffet. He doesn't have to have taken a big scoop from each bowl, but he's taken a scoop from one or two of them. Michael Gove, Donald Trump is warm and charismatic, and he has a soft spot for Britain. Justin Webb, at the BBC, beyond the bluster, Trump may be making America normal again. And just imagine what would have happened in the right-wing press if somebody working for the BBC had written something critical of... Oh, hang on, you don't have to. He wouldn't be allowed to present Newsnight anymore. There you go. It's fairly straightforward. You can work out how that works. More incoming. I think you're probably bored now. Nigel Farage says it will take Britain 48 hours to do post-Brexit trade deal with Donald Trump. I think he also said he'd be unveiling a Labour defector yesterday. Perhaps he's too busy explaining how he managed to trouser £380,000 without filling in the requisite paperwork as a Member of Parliament. And another one from the archives, ladies and gentlemen, another one of your all-time favourites, another one of those guys that you can't help but love. I give you Jacob Rees-Mogg. That was me doing my own applause because Keith's fallen asleep. President Trump will be our greatest ally after Brexit. These people are still, I mean, I don't know what, he's not an MP anymore, is he? But presumably he still gets paid if he writes an article for a newspaper. Simon Jenkins, reliable, Donald, if nothing else. Donald Trump is moving fast and breaking things. This was in The Guardian. But that may result in a better US. And then if we were to go back to the first term, and I'll probably stop now. Fraser Nelson, former editor of The Spectator when it was publishing all sorts of things, including peons to the Waffen-SS. Fraser Nelson writing, a new, more reasonable Donald Trump presidency might just be on the way. What a time to be alive. Trump controls. Tim Stanley's back. Trump controls the world and Britain ought to let him have it. And Daniel Hannan. Yeah, your friend and mine. Trump's flaws are many, but he'd be better for Britain than Biden. If Biden wins, the free world might find itself longing for a stronger Anglo-American alliance. I mean, how wrong can you be? How wrong can you be? Answer, you can be Daniel Hannan wrong. He was on Nick earlier, apparently. That might be worth having a little listen to shortly, because we will be turning our attention next to the... I could tell Eleanor's cross, because she's used the big letters to write time on the screen in front of me. So I'll stop now. But we will be turning our attention next to the question of how all of these people, the best analysts of politics, the best commentators on politics, the best chroniclers of our age that this country has to offer, how could they all have got it so wrong? What was it they thought, or what was it they liked about Donald Trump?
LBC.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
The following is from TfL.
I got loads of flowers the other day, and messages from people I didn't even know. My mates spelled out my name in tea lads, and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings, next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide?
I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
You're welcome. We didn't even do the thing, Keith. We didn't even do the Unhinged headline. That was like the festival of Unhinged headline. That was the mothership of Unhinged headline. That was Unhinged headline after Unhinged headline after Unhinged headline. So, just for the record, for those at the back.
Unhinged headline.
And, of course, there is a serious question underpinning all the silliness. I will get to calls eventually, but I want to play you some Daniel Hennan from earlier as well. But the serious question is this. And I say this as the son of a former Daily Telegraph journalist. I don't understand why they all went all in on Trump. I genuinely don't understand it. He was so obviously hideous. Whether or not you need to wait until the attempted insurrection on January the 6th, or whether or not you need to wait until the pardoning of the vicious criminals baying for the blood of police officers and politicians to realise it. I don't know whether you can forgive people who didn't detach themselves from the Trump juggernaut when he was boasting about sexually assaulting women, or when he sued a woman who accused him for rape for libel and lost. I don't know what the moment is at which you feel that other people should have detached themselves from him, but none of these people did. None of the people who are still paid by British media for their opinions, and there are plenty of broadcasters as well. Some of them are even using the phrase Trump derangement syndrome relatively recently. They are paid to understand, or at least I used to think that we were all paid to understand and explain things. How can people who do this for a living have got it all so wrong? It's different from Brexit, because Brexit was a thing in the future that you could be forgiven for not fully grasping, or for allowing your beliefs and your prejudices to overcome your intellect. Because nobody can prove what's going to happen tomorrow. Little bit of undergraduate philosophy for you. You can't even prove that the sun is going to come up. Or, it's David Hume now, is it? You can't even prove that just because the last 99 crows that you've seen are black, the next one will be black. You can't prove that epistemologically, is it? Don't worry about the dump button, Keith. I said that correctly. But Trump is different. You could see exactly what he was. You knew exactly what he was. You knew exactly who he was. And the massed ranks of the UK media, up to and including BBC presenters, who, of course, would not have been allowed to express an opinion negative of Donald Trump, all went public, all went on the record, all published countless articles and commentaries, failing utterly to see what was obvious. And we can say that now. Which leaves us with two options. Either they didn't care about what was obvious, which is something that fascinates me. 0345 6060 973. Or they didn't see it. It's going to be hard to argue that they didn't see it. Isn't it? It's going to be hard to argue that they didn't know about the grabbing women by the genitals, about the lady that sued him, that he sued for libel after she accused him of rape and he lost. It's going to be very hard to argue that they didn't see the January the 6th insurrection, or they were unaware of the pardons. So you can try, but if they didn't miss it, then they didn't care enough. And perhaps that's the question that we move towards. Why did all these people, some of whom, of course, congratulate themselves on their Christianity on a regular basis, looking at you, Tim Stanley, how did all of these people find it within themselves to not care enough about the hideousness? I mean, talk about the criminality, talk about the impeachment, talk about the felonies. Why on earth
did so many commentators in this country look the other way? Politicians had no choice. Politicians in government, or politicians likely to be in government, had little choice. But you can see people like Starmer holding their nose when they deal with him. Why did all of these people paid to keep the British public up to date with issues, with the news, why did they all neglect their duty so profoundly and so terribly? What did he offer them? What did he represent to them that made them lose any semblance of integrity so completely? Because I hope Michael's wrong. Michael follows these things more closely than we do as a former US diplomat. He talks about this hat trick, this trident, if you like, of Trumpism. Misogyny, like an opposition to women's rights, people who are uncomfortable with growing, but of course not complete, sexual equality in this country, in the States and in this country, because they're going to have answers to the question that involve the UK, climate change denial, and racism. All those people I just read out, some of them are obviously racist, some of them are climate change deniers, and some of them are misogynists. Some of them tick all three boxes. Did I tell you that Nigel Farage is in trouble for not declaring his outside interests in the House of Commons? Anyway, some of them are all three of those things, racist, misogynistic, and climate change denying. But it feels a little bit lazy to me to say that's Trump. That's why they like Trump, because he validates and vindicates more loudly and more prominently than they could ever do their comfort with, support for misogyny, climate change denial and racism, their hatred of women's rights, environmental activism and anti-racism. Think about the moments, like the way that they all went mad during the Black Lives Matter movement. So that's racism ticked. The trad wife movement in America is gathering pace. So that's women's rights ticked. And of course, climate change denial is Donald Trump's middle name. Dominic Ellis is here with your headlines.
The President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, says the EU is prepared to act with unity and urgency over US threats over Greenland. President Trump will address world leaders in Davos later as tensions continue to rise over the Arctic territory. Prince Harry has arrived at the High Court in London to give evidence in his legal action against the Daily Mail's publisher. He's accused Associated Newspapers of unlawful information gathering, which it denies. And it's emerged Nigel Farage inadvertently breached rules for MPs about declaring financial interests 17 times. The Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards found he failed to disclose payments of about £380,000 within a 28-day time limit. He has apologised. LBC weather, rain clearing northern areas, but showers in the far south will spread across the UK later, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Ratimi likes Pension B's modern approach to pensions.
I think Pension B has brought pensions into the 21st century, firstly through the use of technology. Signing up to the app is super simple. Pension B makes me feel very confident about my finances and makes me feel like I have a plan when it comes to my retirement.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to PensionBee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the post saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down.
Not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
33 minutes after 11. You can be more generous if you want than I'm minded to be as we look at the absolute cavalcade of commentators from the UK media, many of whom are regarded as respectable and are indeed respected. Many of them are never off the BBC offering their insights, and they were all obviously and hideously wrong about Donald Trump. As I said at the top of the whole show, there's no pleasure in being proved right because we have to live with the consequences of their cowardice or their wrongness or their whatever it is. You can be more generous, but why did so much of the UK media get it so wrong? So determinedly and often obnoxiously wrong. Liberal tears, Trump derangement syndrome, woke virus. What was it that they were signing up for that has come back to bite them so violently on their collective backsides? Peter is in Stockport. Peter, what do you reckon?
I think it's a fairly straightforward case. The right-wing press have mistaken shared resentment for shared interest.
Ooh,
so
like
from their
that.
Perspective, they've loved him because he annoyed the same enemies, he validated the same grievances, even broke the same norms that they disliked. And finally, he gave them... Well, the headlines that he generated, their audience loved them. So they had that. They had that shared resentment, and that was really powerful for them. And then this happens, the tariffs in Greenland, and so all of a sudden, interests collide. And they're now caught in this dilemma where if they're criticising too strongly, they've betrayed their listeners or they've undermined their readership.
They're in a right old bind, aren't they? Which is why I don't know who is more ridiculous. Tricky Dicky Littlejohn in the Daily Mail still saying, oh, we should invite Donald Trump to take over the UK. Woo! Or Daniel Hannan on LBC this morning saying, oh, I might have thought he was brilliant in the past, but now I think he's awful. I don't know who's more ridiculous. He's awful, but it's only just become clear that he's awful. That's what makes him ridiculous, of course. That might be a question for another day. Is there more than the three things Michael in Greenwich gave us? Is there more when we talk about shared interest? Is it just going to be a discomfort with women's rights, a discomfort with an attempt to tackle climate change, and a discomfort with anti-racism, or a discomfort with non-whites?
Well, I do think it comes back to that individualist point. So if you sort of look at the environmental factors, it's like, why should I change my ways? You can't make me change, you know, why should I take responsibility for a global issue? And, you know, the scientific and the smart yeah. perspective is, listen, we need to take a grown-up responsibility for it. But then you have to behave like a toddler, saying, you know, that's not my... I'm not doing that.
If you don't think about it too deeply, you see somebody who is allowed to be a toddler, and although deep down you know you're not, you quite like the idea that someone who is allowed to be in charge, because you would love to be like a toddler too.
Do you know, there's a funny thing where hatred... I did a meditation course, so this is where it comes from.
Oh, yeah.
Hatred is a really powerful source of focus. So if you hate something, your entire attention goes onto that thing that you hate.
Yes.
So the meditation class is, right, if you feel anger, use that energy of focus and turn it to something more powerful, you know, more productive. But that resentment, it gives them a laser-like focus on an enemy, whoever that would be.
If you don't feel it, you don't understand it. I cannot get my head around, for example, how racism squeezes everything else out of the horizon, everything else out of the bandwidth. That's what you're describing, isn't it? So we can sit here and say, well, he might be you can't really be a little bit racist. Once you reach so I spoke to Michael yesterday, who's now, his own parents have chosen their racism over their grandchild. They would rather stay with their racism than be
able to visit their grandchild, because it squeezes everything else out. Their hatred of, in their case, Muslims.
There's one part of that which I can't answer myself as to whether there is some evolutionary inbuilt otheringness in our human beings' nature.
Well, a tribe would be safer if you killed every interloper. In one sense, but then the tribe that welcomed other people and broadened the gene pool would be A, less inbred, and B, much brighter. So there are evolutionary arguments for racism and anti-racism, I guess. I mean, I'm veering onto territory that I'm not fully quite...
I'm sorry if I've hijacked the question. That's the thing that keeps me awake at night, is thinking, I find it
a fascinating question as well. Idiot's Corner is empty today. I don't know why. I've found a couple of comments, but I don't even know if they're real or if people are just messing with me. But I had one when I mentioned therapy earlier. He wrote, "Therapy is for women, you," and then he used a word that I can't repeat on the programme. And I had a look at his inbox, his previous messages to the program, and he'd be a case study in what you describe. Hates everything, and albeit that I can have fun at the expense of public figures. My heart breaks for a man like that. It's because it's obviously a man, and he would obviously, as with many people who are suspicious of things like meditation or therapy, he would obviously benefit from it more than people who are open to the possibility of change and self-care and self-improvement. What would you say to him? What would you say to somebody listening to you talk about meditation and going, "Oh, what a whoopsie," or me talking about therapy and going, "Oh, you're such a woman"?
He must have a lot of fear if he's afraid to even give it a go.
Yes.
You know, it must be a really small child inside there.
That needs looking after.
Yeah.
And he's currently consumed by hate. 11:39 is the time. But I don't know. I'm a little bit reluctant. The problem is you can be outwardly very charming, even if you are in this category of human. It's not going to apply to everybody. It's not going to be everybody who's come out for Donald Trump. Some of them just won't have thought about things very deeply. Or they've seen somebody else use the phrase Trump derangement syndrome, and they've thought, "Oh, I'll just use that. I'll borrow that, because I don't care about anything, and nothing really matters. When am I getting paid?" So there'll be plenty of people doing that in print and in broadcast. But some of these people take themselves seriously, you know? And how did they end up on this man's team when this man was objectively and immediately hideous, as his own niece described him on LBC last night? How did these people who take themselves seriously, the Hannans, the Fraser Nelsons, the Carswells, the Goves, not the people who are sort of professionally ridiculous like Isabel Oakeshott and her mates, but the people who take themselves seriously and are taken seriously, how did they end up on the team of somebody so obviously hideous? I don't know. Peter's phone line has been vacated, so you could grab it for yourself. 0345 6060 973. John's in Westminster. John, what would you like to say?
Hi. Hello. First time caller, long time listener.
Welcome.
I am quite nervous.
It's only me.
It also, I think this relates back to a question you asked, I think last week, about why do reform voters keep voting for reform?
Yes.
Or keep supporting Brexit? The cruelty is the point. Donald Trump is a narcissist, and he's a cruel man. When he gets up on stage and he takes the mick out of disabled journalists, all these sorts of people, what he's giving is permission to everyone else to be cruel. The reason why the Nazis were so successful when they blamed Jewish people wasn't just that they gave people an enemy. It's that they then said, "Go out and do Kristallnacht. We're going to give you permission to now punch this made-up enemy." And that's what Donald Trump does, is he gives permission to people to be cruel. The cruelty is the point.
And ICE is the manifestation of that.
Yes, totally.
So I've got the quote now that I referred to earlier from a Somali American who runs a business in Minneapolis. She says, "I never thought the man I put in office would come from my family, make me financially struggle, and cause me so much fear that I carry my passport when I go to the bathroom. I feel as though the weapon I built is coming to kill me and my people." And do you know why she liked him? Because she liked the permission that he gave her to be opposed to the LGBTQ agenda.
I, I have a lot of queer friends. And there's also a podcast I listen to called Trash Future. And there's a trans woman on there called November Caldwell Kelly, who said the one thing that trans people and transphobes agree on is that their existence is not up for debate. And what Donald Trump does for the queer community, for people who hate the queer community, people who hate liberals, people who hate immigrants, who hate Muslims.
And Jews. Jews are still there as well.
They
don't ever get a free pass, Jewish people, do they?
He doesn't just give people an enemy. I mean, the Greens give people an enemy. You know, I'm a very left-wing people. We have our enemies. But it's, and you know, whether they're correct or not, but it's that he gives them an enemy to be cruel to.
Your enemies are your enemies because of what they do.
Yes.
Not because of who they are or what they are. And that, to me, is a... I don't know if it's a left-right distinction. I really hope not, because it feels unfair on what you might call decent right-wingers. But but loosely speaking, Trump gives people permission to hate enemies for no reason other than being born.
Other than for being who they are.
The way they were born.
For the crime of being born as who they are. And to then go out and commit violence.
But this doesn't apply to all of the names I've read out in this hour. It simply doesn't. They're not all as venal or as broken as you describe.
I think that there are degrees to it, though. And I think that there is sometimes... I think that, you know, there is sometimes an underlying wish to be cruel to those as you see as your political enemies, to be cruel to those who you do not agree with.
And, of course, in some cases, whose otherness you despise and have been carefully conditioned to despise. And it's not a phone-in, or if it is, it's for another day, on how some people end up in that position and some people don't. And Peter in Stockport bringing evolution into it is probably... worth exploring further. John, thank you. I don't know what you were nervous about. That was a brilliant debut. And apropos the kind of people that we're talking about, Dick Littlejohn of the Daily Mail is the only person I'm aware of who's ever been cited by a coroner at an inquest into a suicide of a trans woman, actually. But his writing was cited by the actual coroner at that inquest into Lucy Meadows' suicide. And he, of course, still gets paid for his sparkling insights and opinions, especially the ones that are filed from an American beach house about the state of the United Kingdom.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They have fatal incompetence.
Straight to the point.
What is the problem they've got over there?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The country's going backwards. Growth down. Energy prices up.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
To be... or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Always dreamt of running your own business. It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:48. It is a question for the ages. None of them will ever be held to account for it, but an extraordinary plethora of people paid large sums of money in many cases to explain and analyse politics for you and for me. I'm a reader and a listener as much as anybody. Have been telling us for years that Donald Trump was fantastic, that Donald Trump was amazing, that Donald Trump was none of the things his critics described him as, even as he told them that he was all the things. And now, finally, the scales seem to be falling from eyes. And I still don't know what they got in return for their moral bankruptcy. Especially the ones who boast about how religious they are, who talk about how religious they are. David is in Chorley. David, what do you reckon?
Hi.
Hello, mate.
James, I mean, it's a year in now. It was fun for the first few weeks, but it's now gone beyond that. It's more than a pantomime now. It's actually a horror movie.
Oh, no, it isn't. Sorry. No, carry on.
It's okay. I'll let you have that one. I mean, the guy's intoxicated on power and drunk at the wheel. And I think that people's bigotry has helped them to get a front seat in his press conferences. So they've supported him, they've backed him, they've tried to explain it. They've got extra airtime for themselves, so they think they're doing their career as well. There will be a mass exodus at some stage when some senior people turn away. There will be a starburst effect.
Pretend it never happened. In fact, give it 6 months and people will be saying, oh, I can't believe people are still talking about Donald Trump. Honestly, that's all history. Nigel Farage will turn up on Question Time soon and say, oh, well, that's all ancient history. We're not talking about Donald Trump anymore.
He's still talking about Obama. I mean, I hope this is a Dallas Bobby Ewing moment where I wake up tomorrow and Obama's taking a shower and Trump just didn't happen.
He hated Obama, didn't he?
Entertainingly, scarily.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was never that the line I use is that it's great to talk about, because I enjoy talking to people like you about things like this, but it's not good to live through. And that, in many ways,
It's horrible.
So what did they get out? The people who could see what everybody else could see and who were among the best rewarded and the highest status commentators in our society to be so hideously and horribly wrong. Can you make sense of that?
Well, if the party in America that acts the way it does now is mimicked in the UK through reform, people will try to echo it in order to still feel relevant and feel a part of somebody else's success, even if it's a madman's success. It's a strange thing in people's DNA. Some of these guys and girls that are this walk, they probably have posters on the wall that still say, no blacks, no dogs, no Irish.
And if not actual, then metaphorical. And there it is. I mean, these things often come in threes, don't they? The power of three. Women's rights, the environment, racism, those three things that people... I just can't deal with the change. And that's why they have to invent ludicrous words to describe their backwardsness, like... woke and what have you. I can tell you that Donald Trump has now arrived in Zurich ahead of his Davos speech, whether or not he knows that he's arrived in Zurich after last night's speech in the White House is a question that I'm not really qualified to answer. He could probably feasibly not know where he is, but we will be taking that speech live on LBC. Oh, I'm pretty sure we will. Live on LBC later this afternoon. It was originally scheduled, I think, for about 1:30, but he's running a little later now, I imagine, and we'll bring you up to date with that as soon as I have the information. Speaking of running a little late, Prince Harry in the High Court later today, almost certainly as a consequence of a tactic deployed by the Daily Mail's legal team to finish a little earlier than expected and therefore see the Duke of Sussex called to the witness box a day earlier than he was expecting. He was expecting to be spending today with his lawyers. My money would say that won't make any difference whatsoever to Prince Harry's preparedness and readiness to take on the third chapter in his battle against British newspapers, having come out on top in the previous two.
Of course, you could be forgiven for not knowing that, because you may still rely upon British newspapers for your news, just as you rely upon British newspaper commentators for your understanding of politics, in which case you will have been under the impression for the best part of, well, for over a year now, that Donald Trump was a fantastic bloke who deserved all the praise that was showered upon him by people like Daniel Hannan, who was on The Breakfast Show. The Breakfast Show today is one for the ages. You've got to rewind it and listen again on the LBC app. We had Daniel Hannan and Susan Hall on the same show. And some great songs as well. There were some lovely tunes as well. But Nick asked Daniel Hannan, who has had a very belated change of heart about Donald Trump and suddenly seen what has been obvious to many of us forever, whether or not he now believes, having written articles previously about how it was the rest of us who were nuts and Donald Trump was brilliant, does he now believe that Donald Trump should be impeached?
How else can you interpret saying, I am so annoyed about not getting the Nobel Peace Prize that I'm going to threaten to invade an unrelated NATO country just to show you all? That is not the behaviour of a normal, sane person. We've kind of internalised this. We've got used to it. Oh, it's just Trump. He talks this way. It's saber-rattling before a deal. You know, watch what he does, not what he says. But first of all, what he says when he's president of the biggest and most powerful economy in the world is a kind of deed. And second, it's not just words. You know, he is sanctioning NATO allies while pursuing a closer relationship with Russia. And anyone on the fence about this would just need to ask themselves this question. Let's suppose that the conspiracy theorists were right. Let's suppose that he really were some kind of Kremlin asset, that Putin really did have some kind of dirt on him. I don't believe that. But ask yourself this question. If that were true, what would he be doing differently in Ukraine, in Canada, in Greenland? What would he be doing more effectively to destroy the Western alliance of which the United States has been the chief beneficiary and exemplar?
You could have been forgiven for thinking that you tuned into this show that, and that my accent had changed slightly during the overnight period, but that wasn't me. That wasn't me 6, 7, 8 years ago. That was Daniel Hannan this morning, the world's wrongest man, finally waking up to the reality of Donald Trump. He's still yet to wake up, I imagine, to the reality of Brexit, which, of course, goes hand in hand. Did any of those people that we read out a moment ago in the absolute cavalcade of unhinged headlines, did any of them not support Brexit? David Frost, I think, probably voted Remain, didn't he, before he realised that he might be able to hitch himself onto Boris Johnson's coattails. I was just going to hit the unhinged headline button there again for no particular reason. In fact, why don't we?
Unhinged headline.
There we go. David is in Congleton. Probably the last word on this, David. Between you and me, I think I may have broken my promise to talk less this show than yesterday, but it goes to show how much I've got on my mind. What's on yours?
Yeah, well, basically, I'm in a bit of a quandary because I was sitting in a nice, safe UK bubble of thinking that the US or the people that voted in Trump are a bunch of rednecks. They have a fear of diversity, a lack of education, a lack of world perspective, and that type of thing. And then you see these guys in the UK who are, you know, I thought, well, us in the UK, we're much better educated. We are aware of the world and everything else. And then you see these educated people coming out and supporting Trump.
Yeah.
And then you think, what the hell's going on? Because you think, well, what do these people stand to gain? And I can understand in the US, Trump is playing to the billionaires. He's doing all these tax breaks and everything else. There's lots of things going on. And he appeals to the rednecks, shall we say. But they're not just rednecks. There's lots of people out there. I mean, I've worked in the US as well as in the UK, worked for a multinational company. And I've had conversations, long conversations, with people who were very pro-Trump, despite being highly educated. And I
Have you got your head around it now, or are we going to just shake our heads together in continuing befuddled? Because I'm reluctant to go down that path that leads to misogyny, racism, and climate change denial. I'd like to think it was a little bit more nuanced than that. And at least two of the names on the list that I opened this hour with, to me, I genuinely believe don't get described in that way. That doesn't apply to them. It doesn't work for them.
Yeah, so really, what I can't get my head around is what do these people who support Trump and praise him in the UK, what do they get out of that? What is there
Respectfully, David, respectfully, mate, that's the bloody phone in. You're supposed to be answering the question, not just asking it again in a charming accent.
Well, okay. I'll get to answer that then. The point could be that they see that the what's coming, in that Farage is gaining more power, and they are lining up with him.
Yeah, well, it's chicken and egg that, because I think Farage is gaining more power precisely because so much of the right wing media is supportive of the kind of horror that Donald Trump represents. Whether or not the emergence or the inability to pretend otherwise will change that is, it seems to me, unlikely. History has taught us that when these people are proved horribly wrong, they tend not to admit it. Some of them are so craven they will move effortlessly to claiming that we shouldn't be talking about it anymore. Nobody wants to talk about Brexit anymore. I wonder how long it will be before nobody wants to talk about Donald Trump anymore. Nobody wants to talk about Boris Johnson anymore. All of these people who insisted these were going to be the best things since sliced bread, and told you, of course, as newspaper readers, radio listeners, social media followers, told you Liz Truss was a genius, Boris Johnson was brilliant. Come over here, Boris, let me tickle your toes. Told you that Brexit was going to be the best thing ever. Austerity was wonderful. It looks like they've all got Donald Trump as wrong as they got everything else, but it won't affect their careers, it won't affect them at all, and that is probably down to ownership, actually, more than anything else. Simon Nixon of The Times puts it well, formerly of The Times, now writes a rather splendid Substack. He says, in the grim world of Daily Mail-trained editors that now dominates the commanding heights of British mainstream journalism, what they call it is talking points, a strong opinion that will agitate and titillate rather than inform. The problem with the Daily Telegraph, of course, is that there's not an awful lot of agitation and there's far too much titillation. And he just runs through the headlines today that suggest Britain's ability to rise to this geopolitical moment is in doubt. Greenland, Trump might be wrong on Greenland, but is correct about Chagos surrender. So there again is the sound of somebody saying, yeah, all right, okay, yeah, but decision to give China its super embassy in London was unavoidable. It's desperate attempts to find talking points rather than actual substantive information and evidence persists. Natasha Clark is here, the LBC. I'm absolutely pooped. I've put in quite a shift for the last 2 hours.
You really have. I'm
handing over to you. What's going to come up at PMQ?
Well, I heard you at the top of 10. You've already done your predictions, so you don't need me anymore. I think you are right, James. I'm sure the Chagos Islands in some shape or form will come up due to what Donald Trump has been saying about it this week. And obviously, you know, let's be frank, he is using it as a political tool to pressure us over Greenland. It's quite evident and it's quite transparent from his Truth Social post that that's exactly what he's trying to do. He was the one that signed off on this deal.
That's crucial, because, you know, speaking of political tools, Nigel Farage might have been whispering in his ear about using this as a way to embarrass Keir Starmer. He clearly hasn't been listening very closely, because his speech yesterday, he gave the impression he thought that we were getting paid for, so he doesn't understand any
doesn't
of it.
Understand
it's
it.
It's perfectly possible he doesn't know he signed off on it.
Perfectly possible. I can send him the link to the White House website that I was rereading yesterday.
And Marco Rubio's statements about what a brilliant piece of diplomacy it was.
Exactly. And genuinely, you know, total U-turn from the US administration overnight in terms of what they are at least saying about this Chagos Islands deal, which they signed off. And again, this is the Trump playbook. And Keir Starmer has obviously decided to treat it with the seriousness that he thinks it deserves, aka, well, actually, you've signed off on it, we're just going to plough on anyway. So I think we will be hearing from him today about that. There are questions, though. What does happen if Donald Trump decides to instruct the US administration to totally rip up this deal, and what that looks like? And it could be a potential, you know, splitting of that relationship, that transatlantic relationship that we've talked about so many times on your show, James. That's really one of Keir Starmer's biggest successes, arguably, is a relationship, how he's handled with Donald Trump. Mm. And we're watching it disintegrate before our very eyes today.
Success until it isn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Really. And it doesn't mean all the people who said he was wrong to do it in the first place were right, but he probably should have seen that, you know, like the scorpion and the frog. The scorpion eats the frog because he's a scorpion.
Yeah, and I'm one of those people that doesn't think at all, actually, that Keir Starmer did the wrong thing. I think this was absolutely the right tack to go by.
What he does now is a much harder question.
It is, but I do think, sadly, it probably always was going to end up this way.
But maybe not potentially. Well, we'll find out, shall we? Because here it is.
Mr. Speaker, can I welcome the Prime Minister following our lead on children accessing social media? In particular, can I thank the Shadow Education Secretary, 61 Labour MPs, and the Greater Manchester Mayor for forcing him to think again. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister and I agree. The future of Greenland should only be decided by the people of Greenland. When the Prime Minister made this point to President Trump on Monday, did the President agree or disagree?
Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, engaging constructively on international security matters hugely, particularly when it comes to security in the Arctic, and that's the context in which this discussion is going on in relation to Greenland. As we engage constructively, I have made my position clear on our principles and values. The first of those is that the future of Greenland is for the people of Greenland and the Kingdom of Denmark alone. The second is that threats of tariffs to pressurise allies are completely wrong. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, we will continue to engage constructively. I've had many international calls in recent days, and the Prime Minister of Denmark is coming to the United Kingdom tomorrow for bilateral talks. But I do want to be clear with the House. I will not yield. Britain will not yield on our principles and values about the future of Greenland under threats of tariffs. And that is my clear position.
Can we bedrock?
Mr. Speaker, I'm very glad to hear the Prime Minister say that. We all know that the people of Greenland do not want to be ruled by America. But does he agree that just as those in Greenland should decide their own future, so should the Chagossians?
Mr. Speaker, I've made out my position on Greenland absolutely clear on Monday and a moment ago. President Trump deployed words on Chagos yesterday that were different to his previous words of welcome and support when I met him in the White House. He deployed those words yesterday for the express purpose of putting pressure on me and Britain in relation to my values and principles on the future of Greenland. Mr. Speaker, he wants me to yield on my position, and I'm not going to do so. Given that that was his express purpose, I'm surprised the Leader of the Opposition has jumped on the bandwagon. I had understood her position. Mr. Speaker, I had understood her position to be that she supported the government's position on the future of Greenland. Now she appears to support words by President Trump to undermine the government's position on the future of Greenland. She's chosen naked opportunism over the national interest.
Mr. Speaker, we'll note that when I asked him what the President told him, he couldn't tell us. Now he expects us to believe he knows what's going on in President Trump's mind. Let me remind him. His Deputy Prime Minister, then Foreign Secretary, used to say that if President Trump didn't like the deal, it wouldn't go ahead. And let's look at what President Trump actually said. The Chagos deal is an act of great stupidity and a sign of total weakness. We didn't need President Trump to tell us that. We've been saying this for 12 months. And let's remind the Prime Minister, President Trump thought that we were doing this, that the Prime Minister is doing this for money. The Prime Minister is giving away territory we own and paying £35 billion for the privilege. Why doesn't he just scrap this terrible deal and put the money into our armed forces?
Prime Minister.
The words from President Trump were expressly intended to put pressure on me to yield on my principles. what he said about Chagos was literally in the same sentence as what he said about Greenland. That was his purpose. Yep. And the future of Greenland is a binary issue that is splitting the world yep. at the moment with material consequences. I've been clear and consistent in my position on the future of Greenland. It is the future is for Greenland and the Kingdom of Denmark alone. The leader of the opposition has taken three positions in 10 days. 10 days ago, she said Greenland was, in her words, a second-order issue. 4 days ago, she said she supported our position on Greenland. Yep. Now she's backing arguments yep. intended to undermine our position, Britain's position on Greenland. This is an important national moment, and yet again the leader of the opposition has shown she is incapable of rising to it.
I've already told him we agree on Greenland. I'm asking about the Chagos deal. That money, that £35 billion, should go to the armed forces. Mr. Speaker, the world is changing. We are in a very different place, the most dangerous international environment since the end of the Cold War. Last week, the head of the armed forces, not me, the head of the armed forces warned that our military faces a £28 billion shortfall. Is he right?
Mr. Speaker, I'm proud we're spending more on defence than any time since the last Labour government. The Strategic Defence Review is back the biggest sustained increase in defence spending since the Cold War. That's £270 billion this Parliament, making defence an engine of growth. That is a stark contrast. Ben Wallace, the longest-serving Conservative Defence Secretary, openly admitted that under their watch, our armed forces were hollowed out.
Order. Mr. Bowett and Mr. Cartledge, it is continuous week in, week out, and there's a couple over here will also be going out for a cup of tea with you. Please, calm it down, or you know the consequence. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, they shout on a Wednesday and they defect on a Thursday. The loudest shouter used to be the former Shadow Justice. We should take a note of who's shouting most loudly this week.
Kevin Bernal.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister wants to talk about defections. Let me tell him that when I had someone undermining my party, I sacked him. If he sacked... Mr. Speaker, if he sacked...
We're going to get through this, Prime Minister's questions. I want to hear the Leader of the Opposition and I want to hear the Prime Minister. Those who don't may leave the chamber. Can we bet?
Mr. Speaker, we all know that if he sacked everyone undermining his party, his front bench would be empty. But these questions I'm asking, these questions are about our national interest. We support our armed forces in every possible way. Later today, my party will vote to protect our veterans from unfair prosecution. He is ordering his MPs to vote against them. In our national interest, and for the sake of all the brave people in the armed forces, past, present and future, will the Prime Minister do the right thing and vote in support of our veterans, not against them?
Mr. Speaker, she's claiming strength. She read the guy's defection letter and then at that point decided to sack him. What was she going to do? Correct the typos and give it back to him? She should have sacked him when he made disgraceful comments about faces in Birmingham. And she failed to do so. And she smiles, saying it's a good thing she's cleared out, a good thing there's fewer Tory MPs. The rest of the country agrees with her completely in relation to that. On the question of veterans protection, under the last government, they passed legislation which was struck down, leaving our veterans utterly exposed. We're putting in place proper measures to protect them.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister wants to talk about leadership. Three of his own cabinet ministers, three of his own cabinet ministers told the Times on Saturday that he needed to learn from me.
Order! I'll tell you now, I'm having no more. Do we understand each other? Thank you. Can we then not?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. But back to the national interest. Instead of acting in it, Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister just tries to get through the day. On the Chinese spy hub embassy, he's too weak. On Chagos, he's too weak. On funding for the armed forces, he's too weak. On protecting our veterans from prosecution, he's too weak. Yes. Mr. Speaker, I will support the Prime Minister when he does the right thing. But time after time, this Prime Minister has done the wrong thing for our country. Isn't the truth that he is too weak to stand up for our national interests?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I've spent the week working with our NATO allies to protect our national security and ensure we have unity in NATO. That's a matter of national importance. She's utterly failed to rise to the occasion and show the solidarity she could have shown in this House. She spent the week trying to hold together what's left of the Tory party. And she says I should learn from her. She has no judgment. Only a week ago. A week ago, she was saying in relation to Greenland, she shrugged and said, it's some second-order issue. Terrible judgment. Then she flip-flopped with three different positions in 10 days on Greenland. She said Liz Truss's mini-budget was 100% right. She said last week she was 100% confident there'd be no more defections just before the latest defection. I'm beginning to think her judgment isn't 100% reliable.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. NHS waiting lists in Birmingham are down by almost a quarter under Labour and still falling. That's more than 28,000 people no longer stuck waiting for essential treatment. Yes, there are challenges still, but they are being addressed and progress is being made. Does he agree that this progress must be sustained, including by reducing ambulance waiting times?
I'm pleased to confirm, Mr. Speaker, that last week saw the second biggest fall in NHS waiting times for 15 years. Waiting lists down by more than 300,000, recruitment of GPs, an extra 2,900, and ambulances are arriving nearly 15 minutes faster this winter than they were last year. There is much more to do. That's why we're delivering the biggest upgrade to our ambulance fleet for many years. That progress has been made possible by Labour's decisions that were opposed by the parties opposite.
Leader of the Liberal Democrats, Ed Davey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We remember how Tony Blair ignored warnings from these benches and tied himself to an unpopular American president and a disastrous foreign policy, while close allies like Canada and France looked on in horror. With Donald Trump increasingly acting like a crime boss running a protection racket, threatening to smash up our economy unless he gets his hands on Greenland, will the Prime Minister avoid Blair's historic mistake, take our advice this time, and join Prime Minister Carney and President Macron in standing up far more strongly to President Trump?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Well, he clearly isn't listening. I said I will not yield on the principles and values that I uphold, this country upholds, in relation to the future of Greenland. But the relationship with the US matters, especially on defence, security and intelligence and nuclear capability, also on trade and prosperity. And Mr. Speaker, whilst he's trying to get sound bites, we mustn't forget a war is raging in Europe. It is in its fourth year. The Russians are raining bombs down on Ukrainian civilians day and night. Temperatures were minus 20 in Kyiv last night. 60% is without power. People are erecting tents to keep themselves warm. We have to work with our allies, including the US, on security guarantees to make sure we can do what we must do in relation to Ukraine. Now, that does not mean we agree with the US on everything. And I've been absolutely clear on my position on Greenland and my position on tariffs. But it is foolhardy to think that we should rip up our relationship with the US, abandon Ukraine, and so many other things that are important to our defence, security and intelligence.
course, we're not arguing that, Mr. Speaker. We're arguing he follows France and Canada, our close allies. But here's one thing that we can agree on, Mr. Speaker, that the UK strengthens our defensive capabilities, like the Prime Minister said earlier. But, Mr. Speaker, the government is going far too slow in investing in our defensive industries. It hasn't even published the defence investment plan that was promised last autumn. And that delay is putting critical industries like helicopter manufacturing based in Yeovil at risk. Putin is waging a war in Europe. Trump is threatening to undermine NATO. We have to rearm fast. So why won't the Prime Minister just get on with buying great British helicopters made in the West Country?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker. Oh. That's about the cheer across the whole country. Mr. Speaker, we are increasing defence spend to the biggest spend since the last Labour government. We are doing that because of the decisions we took at the budget in relation to the money that's available. He wants more money on defence spending. He wants it faster. What did he do at the budget? Did he stand up and say, I support this? No, he voted against it, against the measures necessary to carry out the upgrade.
Steve Yen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sadly, on Christmas Day...
18 minutes after 12 is the time. I thought I'd nodded off then and woken up in... whenever it was that helicopters were defining British politics. It was during the Westland period when Leon Britton and Michael Heseltine were at loggerheads with each other. But anyway, I digress. We shall return to reality after this.
This is LBC.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Bring your pensions together into one easy-to-manage online plan with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Beautiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulguthealth.com/radio.
To be... or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
Win.
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
I did. It was so
good. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
James O'Brien on LBC.
21 minutes after 12. Did I provide the answers to the multiple choice questions? I think I did. Anyway, Farage has got 17 breaches of the MP's code for trousering money from outside interests, and it totals about £380,000. He's not in the chamber because he's in Davos, which he's previously... been describing as in language that prompted the Board of Deputies of British Jews to object to the anti-Semitic undertones when he talks about globalism or George Soros. Here's a quick test for you, Natasha, before we get stuck into PMQs. Nigel Farage, who hates Davos but is there now, has only ever praised two people for their speeches at the World Economic Forum conference in Davos. Would you like to guess who they are? Not guess, because you're the political editor. You probably remember.
No, I don't think I do, actually.
What are you talking about?
No, I've never been to Davos.
Expect your resignation in the morning.
No, sorry. Please tell me.
Well, one's obvious.
one's obvious.
Donald Trump.
I was about to say, yeah. And I thought it sounded too obvious.
No, but the other one, it gives you an indication of...
some sort of financial hedge fund management boss.
No, good call. It's worse.
Okay.
Congratulations to Prince Andrew for his comments at the reception he hosted in Davos supporting Britain. So there is...
Gosh, that's aged Barry, well.
Once
that's
again.
Aged well.
Hasn't it just? Well, my inbox suggests that was... I mean, 10-0 to Starmer.
Yeah.
10-0's probably a bit harsh, but that's what my inbox is suggesting.
I mean, you could hear it, couldn't you, in the chamber from the Labour backbenchers. I think that was the happiest we've seen them in a good number of weeks. Keir Starmer really showing that he can be very good at delivering an effective message when he wants to, I don't know whether he's been practising more or whether it's just something that he clearly feels far, far more passionate about. But, you know, talking about that message that he was sort of talking to it more to Ed Davey, I think, more than Kebby Badenoch about, I will not yield. I will not yield my position on Greenland. I am essentially all but saying I am standing up to Donald Trump. A message that I think many people across the country want to hear. Keir Starmer's been talking about how badly this tariff threat has been going down all week. And here is him sort of standing up and really making the argument, and making a very effective argument, I thought, when he's saying, you know, our trade relationship matters, but I won't yield on my principles. There are two things, and he's trying to marry them together. It's a very difficult strategy that he's got, but absolutely articulating, I thought, really, really well there.
Yes, I think I agree with you. In fact, he tripped Ed Davey up a little bit, because Davey's first question was clearly going to be, will you please be more robust with Donald Trump?
He was very ready.
And he already had been, because I think he went further on that point about he is using Chagos, which he clearly doesn't understand, and which he not only endorsed, signed, but praised, or his people praised it. So he's using that to try to undermine the British position on Greenland. And that put Badenoch, as I suspected, as I said to you, might happen. If she hasn't got all her ducks in a row, she's going to fall apart very quickly today. And it's an indefensible position. The president is using the Chagos deal that he was very enthusiastic about to pretend that he isn't, in order to undermine Starmer's profound opposition to his Greenland ambitions. And Badenoch jumped the wrong way.
Yeah. The idea that he said that he's using, basically using the Chagos, as we were discussing at the top there, and saying it out loud, really, you know, and, you know, it is obvious when you do read it, isn't it?
Yes.
But I think people haven't really been saying it. This is exactly being used by Donald Trump in an attempt to try to pressure him to change his position. And yes, you're right. I think, you know, there was an alternative reality where Kemi Badenoch could have lent in to the idea of, I support what the Prime Minister is doing on Greenland. I support the idea of him and Britain not, you know, giving in to our principles over Donald Trump. But I still feel that the Chagos Islands and the deal around that is not the right way to go. But as ever, her tone is incredibly combative.
Mm.
And I was really struck by Keir Starmer at the press conference earlier this week, essentially saying, Kemi Badenoch, I really welcome your position on Greenland. I really welcome your support in this. We, you know, this is a moment where we need to stand together. And that I was thinking maybe this Prime Minister's questions might be where we got that moment of unity. Absolutely no chance.
Well, he walked the walk, didn't he, over Ukraine when Johnson was Prime Minister, is that we had some PMQs that were spectacularly uneventful, precisely because they were moving as one on the major issue of the moment. And Badenoch could have done that. There was nothing to prevent her from letting this PMQs be a statement of intent from the UK Parliament about how resolute they would be in defence of European interests. It might even have put a little bit of blue water between the Tories and Reform, which she needs at the moment for defection reasons. If there is anybody else considering a defection, being on the side of our enemies, or Europe's enemies, as opposed to on the side of our allies, would be something that might put people off. But she didn't. She fluffed it. I mean, let me read you some of the messages. Ben writes, is Kemi smoking something? Going from supporting words on Greenland to supporting Trump's deranged views of the Chagos deal that he himself signed off on. Alan, Kemi sides with Trump. Wow. Jonathan, in Kemi's cafe, apparently you can both have your cake and eat it. And Neil in Skipton, wow, Kemi thought she had Keir Starmer with that question about Chagos. He came out with the strongest he's been for a while, which is what you were saying, isn't it? That when he's got the bit between his teeth, he's a very different politician.
Yeah, he's very strong on the international stage. As a world leader, he's really in his element, as so many prime ministers eventually become to be. But yeah, you're right. You know, I think what the normal people outside this studio and outside Westminster will think of this today is Kemi Badenoch siding with Donald Trump. And at the exact moment when our Prime Minister is saying, nope, we're going to stand up for our values, and she comes across, do you remember her, one of her first PMQs when Donald Trump became Prime Minister? And that went down terribly when she essentially went too far with her saying, well, actually, if Donald Trump doesn't like the Chagos deal, then neither do I. It's just too much.
It's a funny one, because she is driven almost entirely, as far as I can tell, by looking at which way the wind is blowing on the sort of outer reaches of social media and the Daily Telegraph comment pages and things like that, and they haven't decided yet whether or not it's time to blow the whistle on Trump, whether or not this is an egregious enough breach of normality and Western interests to stop pretending that it can be. It's a bit like Mussolini making the trains run on time. We've heard a lot of that.
I think.
So she doesn't quite know what to do.
No, she doesn't. But I think there was a way through where she could have used some of her questions about Chagos and said, well, the president has said one thing. He said one thing last year. What are you doing? What do you understand the president's position to be? And there are ways to get into the argument and saying, well, actually, we do believe that Chagos is the wrong decision. We do believe we should be spending that money on defence. And she did sort of go into that, but it didn't feel a very jointed set of questions, and I don't think it really probed Keir Starmer. And like you said, he clearly had his Weetabix. He clearly was ready to answer those questions from Ed Davey, and had an incredibly strong reason for why he is pursuing this diplomatic tightrope of trying to stay close to Donald Trump, even when Ed Davey is saying, you know, look at what happened to the last guy that tried to stick really closely to an American leader. And obviously that didn't turn out quite so well, did it?
No, it didn't. Well, thank goodness she never makes any gaffes, because that would put her in incredibly tricky territory. And David, less, as for reasons we've discussed already, less impressive than some weeks, precisely because Starmer had already done the thing that Ed Davey was encouraging him to do.
Yeah.
We shall see. I tell you what, I had a little contretemps earlier, a friendly disagreement with one of our colleagues about whether Starmer should be in Davos or not. And I was arguing that he should be. After that, I think he made the right decision to be here.
On one hand, if you thought that you could secure a meeting with Donald Trump, sure, I think he'd be over there in a flash. Clearly, he's felt, or his team have felt, that he's not able to do that. And with Trump in such a cantankerous mood, do you get more out of staying behind and sort of talking to your allies and leaving someone else to do a bit of heavy lifting? You know, they are all in lockstep together, all these European leaders. They're talking all the time. It's not like he's not involved. But if you can't, if you were to fly all the way to Davos and didn't get that meeting with Donald Trump, looked embarrassed on the sidelines, arguably, you'd be left weak. And he has, like I say, articulated, I think, to the British public very well why he's doing what he's doing. And even if you're not talking to President Trump today, as potentially you could be, he's making that argument very, very articulate today, and has pulled out a barnstormer, hasn't he?
Yes, and I suppose if you were an enemy of British interests and a great admirer of our enemies, whether it's Vladimir Putin or latterly Donald Trump, you'd be on the plane to Davos in a heartbeat.
If you thought you could actually talk to them and have a meeting with them.
Well, maybe Farage will, as a great admirer of our enemies.
We shall see.
And part of me doesn't care, but I know that we have to, for professional reasons. It's 12:30. Evan Harris is in the High Court watching preparations for Prince Harry's appearance in the witness box. He'll join us at 12:45. Before that, my favourite comedian and yours, Stuart Lee, will be joining us to, among other things, address the question of how on earth you can do comedy when reality is so hilarious. But before all of that, Amelia Cox has your headlines.
The Prime Minister has accused Donald Trump of changing his mind on the Chagos Islands to put pressure on the UK over the future of Greenland. Sir Keir Starmer says he will not yield to Donald Trump and will welcome the Danish Prime Minister here on Thursday. Prince Harry is in court to give evidence in his legal action against the publisher of the Daily Mail. He's among high-profile names, including Liz Hurley and Elton John, who have accused A&L of unlawful information gathering. And inflation rose slightly in December as a rise in tobacco duty and Christmas getaways pushed up the cost of living. The rate of consumer prices index rose to 3.4% from 3.2% in November. LBC weather mainly cloudy with the odd spell of sunshine in Scotland, rain pushing northwards, which will reach northern Scotland this evening, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC.
Okay, do emails. Burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris with their insurance.
and sorted. They're becoming naturists, cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sun Life Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Work now. Sorry, it's a bit loud. Basically, so I was thinking we could get Mackey's tonight. Had a Big Mac on my mind all day, and delivery fee on the app is now from 99p. So, you in? Of course you are. Ha, love you. Bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T's and C's apply.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 12:33. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Now, I don't know if you were listening the other day, but given that we've had so many hideous, unhinged headlines today, it might be nice to be reminded of one that was from a gentler context, an altogether warmer, unhinged headline. But we did it properly.
Unhinged headline.
Her time has come. Did Mondrian owe his success to a cross-dressing lesbian artist who lived in a Cornish cove? And because I am very hilarious, I am naturally very funny, I pretended that that was going to be a phone-in. So I did. Her time has come. Did Mondrian owe his success to a cross-dressing lesbian artist who lived in a Cornish cove? And then I went, 0345-6060-973. Call me now. Which was a hilarious joke. But someone did call. And unfortunately, our assistant producer, Rebecca, thought that it was either a prank caller or a weirdo who described themselves as Stew in London and wanted to come on air to explain that indeed Mondrian did owe much of his success to a cross-dressing lesbian artist who lived in a Cornish cove. The British artist was called Marlo Moss. Somewhat more surprisingly, the Stew in London who rang in good faith to make this case was actually... the best comedian in the country, Stuart Lee. Thank I can only apologise.
It's all right. Well, it would have seemed strange, but Lamorna, which is the cove in question, was a brilliant haven for female artists of the 20th century. Marlowe Moss, as you say, was there with Gluck, the surrealist, who was an heir to the Lion's Cake fortune, a real pioneer. Laura Knight, who was the first woman ever to paint a female nude and painted it in Lamorna. And then a little bit later, Aethel Colquhoun, who I just did some of the voiceovers for the app for the Tate's Aethel Colquhoun retrospective. Sensation. And I wrote the introduction to the last edition but one of her autobiography, the Living Stones. Next year, I published a guided walk to the artist's residences in Lamorna in Weird Walk magazine, which you can find online.
Oh, yes.
And later this year, I'm doing a documentary with Radio 4 with the folk singer... Daisy Rickman, where we walk around Lamorna and look at the artist's hideout. So actually, not only is that true, but it's an absolutely fascinating place. And if you do a little bit of reading before you get there, the whole place comes to life in three dimensions.
Absolutely magical. Next time we see Stew in London on the switchboard, we're going to put you straight to air.
Yeah, but what's the thin line between going, do you know who I am?
And no, people well, go, I, no. Get, I know, I know.
No,
well,
we
I
don't. Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's all right.
Anyway,
for people who haven't seen Stuart Lee's live show, you've just had an introduction to the ease with which he encompasses an incredible range of subjects and depth of knowledge. But of course, the central thrust is politics. I mean, it is, or at least current affairs.
Yeah, well, increasingly. And people, this current show, right, I started it about a year and a bit ago, and Stuart Lee versus the Man Wolf, and it was about the idea that the discourse in politics and comedy and entertainment and journalism is being taken over by belligerent authoritarian bullies. And at the time when I started it, I could see people going, well, it's not that bad, and I've just had 2 months off it.
Yeah.
I've got to reboot it for the next 9 months, and now it's not bad enough. You know, I need to ramp up. In the second half, I become a sort of right-leaning American libertarian werewolf stand-up comedian who would love Trump and Charlie Kirk and all that sort of thing. And really, I need to go through it, because the things that that character is saying at the moment are not as awful as the things that are being said.
You get overtaken by reality.
Overtaken by reality.
Which again, you could be forgiven. Well, I don't think we did see it coming, did we?
No.
You presume that you've reached close to the bottom.
Yeah.
And then they dig another basement.
Yeah, but what we've got to accept is that all those things where people say he doesn't mean it is that he does mean it. And well, what I don't understand, and what I want to try and talk in the show, is like in December, Trump said that American foreign policy was now to destabilize European democracies and use propaganda and funding to put far-right governments in place. And we just kind of carried on as if that...
Oh, don't worry about what he says, worry about what he does.
But and now he's shown that's not enough. He's threatening military action to do exactly that. And so really we need to act like we're in a war, and we need to stop the fact that Palantir controls all our military information. And I'm going to make that idea hilarious whilst wearing a werewolf costume
And a prosthetic penis. That's not a spoiler, is it? I hope.
No, not really.
But it's in a lot of the reviews. It has been mentioned. I've seen it twice, and I was wondering when I saw that you were coming back. First for a good stretch at the Alexandra Palace.
Yeah, 2 weeks in February.
From the 3rd of February. I did wonder how much of a change you will make. So is it tinkering at the edges, or do you sit down with it?
I think the beginning of the first half, where I sort of set up what's happening in the world, will need to be, because when I wrote it 12 months ago, a thing people thought was funny was that Keir Starmer was a bit boring. You know, how long ago is that now that we're in this crisis? So I need to set that up differently. And then the second half, really, where there are these variety of types of American voices or of right-leaning libertarian voices, needs to be ramped up. But Trump's given me some great lines, like, the only constraint is my own morality. I think it's a really funny one that you can drop in. It's sort of like, like when a comedian would do a bad taste joke and go, it's just a joke, I'm only joking. The only constraint is my own morality is a really great sort of uptown, upscaled version of that. So it's just looking at what he says, really. And I think the weird thing is, some shows you worry that they're running away from you. I had one on the go for a couple of years about Brexit and Boris, and the whole plot line was about that. And it kept looking like he was going to be sacked or quit. And every time he wasn't sacked and didn't quit, I was sort of punching the air because I still had another 3 months of the tour. And that, whereas this one, the current affairs have rushed towards it. And I think people will find it comforting, at the very least. Because there is a terrible sense that no one's really talking about this. You are, but most people aren't talking about it in a drastic enough way.
You do find people deriving great comfort just from the knowledge that they're not going mad, and other people are seeing things as clearly as they are. And there's a lot of us. It's just that we're not very well represented in the sort of high-profile platform.
Well, most of the headlines this morning are about the internal disputes of the Beckham family.
Yes, yes.
You know, which is
we may have done half an hour on that yesterday, okay, Stuart, right. So, you know, keep it.
Yeah, okay, but yesterday...
It's a living.
Yesterday...
Yes, okay.
...was a different... You know, yesterday seems a million years away already, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Which actually makes me wonder, because you're talking as if you're about to revise... The show, or you're about to rewrite the show, and I just double checked the dates. So it's January the 21st, and you're on stage at the Ali Pally on Tuesday the 3rd.
Yeah.
But you can't do it last night because he was about to speak. Well, you couldn't do it yesterday because he did the White House, and then you couldn't do it today because he's about to go to that. So when are you going
to
do it?
You have to keep it right. For a show like this, like 2 hours about an idea, you have to have spaces in it where you can land what's happened,
right?
But without dismantling the whole infrastructure of it. But people love that, like a thing from last night's news or today's news that seems to blend into the whole thing.
Yeah.
is really exciting, and it's really exciting to do, to be out in front of audiences of thousands of people and doing something for the first time is really counterintuitive. It's not what we do really. We tend to work stuff out and tryouts and whatever. So it's really exciting. But I think, you know, it's a special time. It really calls for a direct address to what's going on. It's just lucky that I chose to do this thing, and the world has got rapidly worse, exactly in line with the concept of the show.
So it's not a moment to feel sorry for comics or satirists, this show, because actually the point you chose to go in on, or the points, the entry points that you chose, have got bigger and bigger in a way. Yeah. Not smaller and smaller.
Not smaller, and they've got more impact, and people are more desperate to hear about them. And I mean, what I'm surprised about today in PMQs is that really, we're in a massive international crisis, and we should be on a war footing where the politicians aren't arguing amongst themselves, and they're going to go, what are we going to do about this? And I think it's a strange situation, both here and in the States, where on some level, the public look to comedians and satirists for at least commentary, if not answers, you know, because they're not getting it from the normal sources.
Yes, although I always have that quote of Peter Cook's in the back of my mind about what a great job the cabaret artist of the Weimar Republic did in stopping the rise of the Nazis.
Although at least they tried.
Yes, well, at least they try. Because Mark Twain came back, I think, or not came back, but Mark Twain at a previous age said something about that if they're being laughed at, they'll fall apart. He had something about how these kind of characters, these narcissistic monsters, fear mockery and hatred more than mockery and comedy more than almost anything else.
A lot of Trump's vengeance is driven by the idea that people find him ridiculous and he wants to punish them for it, you know. And that email he sent about the Nobel Prize, for example, is just like, an infant has been given a nuclear arsenal. You know, it's really mad.
Nothing can stand against laughter, is what Twain...
Did you just say that?
No, I just looked it up.
You looked it up?
I'm passing it off as mine. That was Mark Twain.
Yeah.
And I'll get the flipping Peter Cook quote right as well, because it's a good one. Those wonderful Berlin cabarets, which did so much to stop the rise of Hitler and prevent the outbreak of the Second World War. When you see something like that email, the text message to the... Prime Minister of Norway, do you do what I do? Do you have to double check? You still think that can't be real?
You have to double check, particularly now where a lot of things that are AI generated that pop up on the internet, you assume are ludicrous. But a lot of the street demonstrations in the States have kind of countered authoritarianism with surrealism, with people turning up in crazy costumes and stuff and trying to make a carnivalesque atmosphere. So you often can't quite tell what's going on. It's only going to get worse.
You're spending the best part of the year now with Stuart Lee versus the Man Wolf.
Yeah.
What I mean, I know you can't answer this question substantively, but the show, by the time you finish off in Chelmsford, at the end of November, of November, how different will that show be for people who don't watch much live comedy or follow you particularly? How different will that show?
It depends how different the world is.
It's that simple.
It depends how different the world is, yeah. And, I mean, it's weird because the more chaotic it gets, the funnier it will be, and I will profit from that like a horrible vulture circling over the rotting corpse of international relations as they decompose.
Good for business, bad for the soul.
That's right, yeah.
There it is. Stuart Lee, at the Alexandra Palace, as I say, from Tuesday the 3rd of February, and then on the road. You can get the full details at stuartlee.co.uk. Can they get tickets there as well?
Yes, in fact, make sure you go there and don't get scalped by anyone.
So go direct to source. Go to the organ grinder, Stuart Lee, lwe.co.uk versus the Man Wolf. I say break a leg.
Thanks.
But not a prosthetic penis. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Keir Starmer gets spiky at Prime Minister's questions over President Trump's stupidity jibe. But why isn't the PM at Davos? Also, a special report on what people in Kyiv are facing.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Hannah entered the Omaze Million Pound House draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next when you enter by this Sunday at omaze.co.uk. Because one person is guaranteed to win a £5 million house in London with all the furniture. And a quarter of £1 million just to help you settle in. Roger recently opened the door to a brand new future.
Is this a dream?
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million, you must enter by this Sunday at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12:48 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Prince Harry, the Duke of Sussex in the High Court today, pursuing his case against the Daily Mail newspaper and their parent company. We need to catch up first, I think, with what happened yesterday, and then we'll move on to what has been happening this morning. Happily, we're joined once again by Dr. Evan Harris, the former Liberal Democrat MP, former director of the Hacktoff campaign, and nowadays a member of the claimant's legal team. He has been in court this morning, and indeed yesterday, and will no doubt be throughout the proceedings. So, do you want to give us a quick roundup of what happened yesterday, Evan, if that's all right?
Yes. So, this week has been opening statements, and 3 days were set aside. 1.5 days for the claimants, that's David Sherburne, who took 20 minutes short of his 1.5 days, and 1.5 days for the defendant to give their evidence. What I then found was, what we then discovered was that after 1.5 hours, Associated stopped their opening and said, look, it's all in written submissions. I don't need 1.5 days. That meant that Prince Harry, who was due to give evidence on Thursday, was going to be asked to bring it forward a day, perhaps to disrupt his preparation, perhaps to disrupt his plans. Might be considered a sneaky trick, but it doesn't seem to have fazed him at all. And he came on to the witness box, therefore, a day earlier than was expected, and started at 11:30 this morning.
What did we hear in the opening statements yesterday? Give us a flavour of who is accused of what?
Well,
because I know journalists were named in court yesterday, weren't they?
Yes, in the claimant's opening statement, which was Monday and half of yesterday, David Sherburne laid out the scope of the case. And so he first talked about the various private investigators, around a dozen of them, that he said were used habitually by the Mail, and in particular by some of the journalists bylined on these articles, or who were the desk heads, the news editors, if it was the news desk, or the showbiz editor, if it was the showbiz desk. And that, he said, goes to the propensity of these journalists to use private investigators for stories, to obtain private information where those stories contain that private information. Now, it has to be remembered that all this is completely denied by Associated. He then went on to outline some of the claims, giving example articles, because there's altogether about 40 articles between the six claimants. But he went through in order Baroness Lawrence, Prince Harry, Elton John and David Furnish, Elizabeth Hurley, Sadie Frost and Sir Simon Hughes, setting out what their claim was and giving examples of the private information that was there and the way that there was no, as far as the claimant was concerned, no lawful way that information could have been obtained, and then showed documents that he said were suggestive that this was obtained unlawfully and or through private investigators. None of these articles are admitted as having come from unlawful information gathering from Associated. And then the final thing he did was address an important part of Associated's case, which is that the claimants have brought this too late. So regardless of whether we're guilty, which they deny, in any event, it's too late, because you've got to bring your claims within 6 years of the article appearing, or at least knowing, being given the facts that would enable you to say that this was unlawfully obtained. And the claimants say that they didn't know these facts until they were given information within the last 6 years that this was unlawfully obtained. And Associated's case is, come on, you knew earlier, you could have known and could have made inquiries. And that's going to be an important part. And the claimants say they didn't know any earlier, because most of these articles were from 20 years ago, because This was always denied by the Mail, including at the Leveson inquiry. And the Mail say you shouldn't have believed the denials by Mr. Dacre at the Leveson inquiry. We discussed this previously, I think, James.
Yes.
You were wrong to believe it, even though it's true. You were, what Mr. Dacre said, you were wrong to believe him. And David Sherborne, and we've had this in the Mirror and the News Group as well, you know, News of the World. And David Sherborne described it as an unattractive position, because it's not clear whether Mr. Dacre now wanted to be believed or not believed. But it is a legitimate legal approach for them to take. And David Sherborne spent yesterday morning saying why it is that they couldn't have known, didn't know and couldn't have known earlier. And that will be a matter that the judge will have to decide.
And that brings us to today and the appearance a little earlier than scheduled, as you say, but I think it's probably fair to say that if there were some sneaky tactics being deployed here, they probably misfired, because Prince Harry's been preparing for this moment for years, not hours. How is he getting on? What has been happening?
I can't talk about his preparation, but it doesn't appear to be flustered. By the case. Now, he's given evidence before in the Mirror trial, so this isn't his first rodeo. Nevertheless, it's not, I don't think any of the claimants are particularly looking for, well, you'd think claimants wouldn't be looking forward to giving evidence. He gives the impression that he wants his day in court, and I think it will only be a day.
Right.
And he has been, I think it's fair to say, and I'm speaking now objectively as an observer, he's been feisty.
Right.
The counsel for Associated, Anthony White, KC, has been polite. He's not some sort of demon cross-examiner. It's not his style. And Prince Harry has politely and firmly pushed back, and indeed, as you know, made comments about the case that the judge says that really are best for his counsel to argue. So clearly, Prince Harry's very eager to argue his case as well as answer the questions, and that's clear. But I don't think, again, I'm speaking I'm trying to be objective. It doesn't appear that there's been any big blow landed, but we'll see how the Daily Mail and their clients in the press report it, but it seems to be, no blows landed.
They can put in quotes, anything that as we saw this morning with quotes from the Mail's own statements being put in headlines with quote marks around them in the newspaper coverage. What's his goal then? If we were to sort of break down what the Duke of Sussex seeks to achieve today, what would you say that was?
Well, he wants to make sure that his evidence is clear and consistent with his written evidence. So that's what all claimants wish to do. And this is it's a sort of solo job because the legal teams aren't allowed to coach witnesses as to what they should answer. They have a witness statement and then questions around that by a very intelligent and skillful counsel. And so the claimants, there's two things. The claimant's position mainly relies on documents, right? Because there's no taped admission from journalists. There's no video footage. A lot of the case is inferential. You know, on the balance of probabilities, which is the test in the civil courts, could this article have been tainted other than by unlawful means, given the documents we've seen and and what the witnesses are saying? That's the first thing that is important for the case, and then it'll be argued by other witnesses and in submissions, written and oral submissions at the beginning, which we've had, and at the end. The second thing they have to do, because if they win, they get damages. And I'm not sure Prince Harry will be keeping his damages rather than giving them away. But nevertheless, the size of the damages depends on the distress, the damage that was caused, which is mainly distress in these cases. And so there's no prizes for sort of being stoic, even if he is, because it's quite clear, if you've read the autobiography and heard some of his interviews, that he felt that his growing up and his private life has been damaged by the scrutiny of the press, and that comes with the job, he says he accepts, but not when they resort to unlawful means and then lie about it, in his view, again, denied by Associated.
Going back, of course, to, as I think he said in court, or at least in the witness statement, going back to 1997 when I was 12 years old, following the death of my mother and her treatment at the hands of the press, I've always had an uneasy relationship with them. We're going to run out of time. Do we know when Dacre will be in the box?
I think in early February. He's going to be the first of Associated's witnesses, and so I think it'll be around mid-February. I don't think Valentine's Day, but I'll
stop it. And finally, Dr. Evan Harris, I guess Associated's job is to prove that the stories came from sources that were not unlawful, and that involved yesterday claims that it may have been dead people that told them the things that they managed to print about the Duke.
Well, I wouldn't put it as in such a partisan manner. They say that they had legitimate sources. It so happens that some of those legitimate sources are unable, short of Ouija boards, to defend themselves against the claims that they were loose-lipped. But it's certainly not the case that all their claim sources are deceased. Some of them are confidential and unknown. And journalists are allowed, as you know, and it's important that they are allowed to maintain confidential sources, but it does make it difficult to test that. And that's why the performance of Associated's witnesses in the witness box will be important, because the judge has to say, are they telling the truth on X? If they're not, and if he decides they're not, then he might consider they don't have credibility on Y. And if Y is saying, I have a confidential source, then that may not be believed. So there's a lot of pressure to come for Associated's journalists.
Indeed, and a lot of moving parts, as you always do such a cracking job of describing. Thank you, Evan Harris. Dr. Evan Harris, as you know, former Lib Dem MP, former director of HACTOF, and now a member of the claimant's legal team in this case. It'd be interesting to see how it's reported tomorrow, and we'll do our best to ensure that there's some balance on this programme with the very, very partisan coverage that almost all the newspapers, possibly except The Guardian, will be providing in the interim. It is nearly 1 o'clock. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinion. Put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my show every day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
You know, you wrote a book called How to Be Wrong.
How Not to Be Wrong.
Oh, sorry.
How to Be Right. I mean, that was the subtitle of it, I think. That's my next one.
I can help you with it, because you're wrong. Shall I tell you where you're wrong?
Yeah, go on.
Don't panic. Keir Starmer should be in Davos.
Okay. Oh, that's an interesting point. I'm 52-48, she, as ever, on these difficult subjects. And I was passionately thinking that he shouldn't be. That he should be before PMQs. It was only PMQs that, and it made me temporarily change my mind.
Well, I mean, you might be right, but I'm going to test it all a moment with callers.
I'll bring you a book tomorrow.
Could you? I was going to say that. You really should write the one that I've just invented. Yeah. How to Be Wrong.
It's funny you should say that.
I've been practicing it for years. Okay. Be fine. At 3 today, as NATO Chief Mark Rutter says, we must not forget Ukraine. Well, we haven't. A special report from Kyiv at 3. What if the US abandons it? Focus on Davos, though, right or wrong. President Trump's arrival, Keir Starmer's absence, the US president running late because Air Force One conked out. John Sopel's been on Air Force One, so we'll talk to him about that. The Prime Minister was uncharacteristically spiky about Mr. Trump at Prime Minister's questions, saying the President wants me to yield on my position and I am not going to. Should he have been at Davos? I say yes. I'll tell you my reasons for that in just a moment. Why isn't he there? Do you think he should have been there? 0345 6060 973. Speak to you in a minute.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer says he will not yield to Donald Trump over the future of Greenland. He's been speaking to MPs in the Commons following threats from the US president to impose tariffs on allies which don't support a US takeover.
I have made my position clear on our principles and values. The first of those is that the future of Greenland is for the people of Greenland and the Kingdom of Denmark alone. The second is that threats of tariffs to pressurise allies are completely wrong. Yeah.
President Trump is just touching down in Davos, where he is due to address world leaders. Tensions are continuing to run high, with the American Treasury Secretary saying the UK is letting the US down over the Chagos Islands. Chancellor Rachel Reeves says 2026 will be the year the UK turns the corner, despite a rise in the rate of inflation. December's figure rose to 3.4%, driven by price increases to alcohol, tobacco and transport. That's up from 3.2% in November. Speaking to LBC, Shadow Chancellor Samuel Stride blamed the increase on what he called the government's economic mismanagement.
Inflation's well above target, which of course is hitting people hard in their pockets, particularly the most vulnerable. And look, it's due to Labour's choices. They put up taxes on businesses, some of which is passed on to higher prices. They borrowed a lot of money, spent a lot of money, and stoked inflation that way.
Prince Harry has said in his written evidence that he was really worried something bad was going to happen when he was going out with Chelsea Davey. He's among high-profile names who have accused Associated Newspapers of unlawful information gathering, which it denies. The Duke of Sussex says the behaviour of the press was not normal and she was left shaken. A parliamentary watchdog has ruled Nigel Farage breached the rules 17 times after failing to declare financial interests. The Commissioner for Standards found the Reform UK leader failed to disclose payments of around £380,000 within the time limit. He's apologised for the delay in filing the accounts. And homeowners will be able to access cheap loans to install solar panels, heat pumps and batteries. Ministers say the Warm Homes Plan will help tackle fuel poverty but also cut carbon emissions. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 31 points at 10,095. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather mainly cloudy with the odd spell of sunshine in Scotland. Rain pushing northwards, reaching northern Scotland this evening, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Forest bathing? Really? The real secret to feeling young? Simply living young. And with a new SEAT Ibiza, you can roll young with a £2,000 SEAT contribution. Or the new SEAT Arona with a £3,000 SEAT contribution. Both at 6.9% APR representative. SEAT. Rolling young. With Solutions PCP. Ordered by 31st of March 2026. Indemnities may be required. SEAT Finance.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Well, he couldn't have timed it better. Good afternoon to you. Keir Starmer is in the House of Commons, not in Davos. That's what we're going to talk about today. But as I speak, I see the presidential helicopter landing in Davos itself ahead of a speech at the summit that the president is going to give. He was delayed by a problem with Air Force One overnight. He was expected to speak around 1:30, and we will, whenever he speaks, do hope it's in our time, but whenever it is, we'll play it to you here at LBC. Who knows what he's going to say? He's certainly going to talk about Greenland and those tariffs, I would imagine. It's certainly what's on most people's minds, as well as Ukraine. And we're going to reflect on all of that this afternoon. He's there to meet world leaders at a summit in Davos. We understand he has cancelled some meetings based on things that some world leaders like Macron and Chancellor Merz of Germany have said or not said to his satisfaction. But I'm curious as to why Keir Starmer isn't there. He spoke before he became Prime Minister of it being an important place to be when he went there, but not today of all days when it's such a momentous time, given the Greenland statements from America, given the threat of tariffs, and also that all-important relationship, the Western Alliance, NATO, underpinning all of that, very much including Ukraine's fate, which we'll talk about much later in the programme. So I'm curious as to why he isn't there. This is what Sir Keir Starmer had to say in the Commons about Greenland and Donald Trump's Truth Social post about him yesterday, in which he talked about the policy on the Chagos Islands being an act of stupidity.
As we engage constructively, I have made my position clear on our principles and values. The first of those is that the future of Greenland is for the people of Greenland and the Kingdom of Denmark alone. The second is that threats of tariffs to pressurise allies are completely wrong. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, we will continue to engage constructively. I've had many international calls in recent days, and the Prime Minister of Denmark is coming to the United Kingdom tomorrow for bilateral talks. But I do want to be clear with the House. I will not yield, Britain will not yield, on our principles and values about the future of Greenland under threats of tariffs. And that is my clear position.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very glad to hear the Prime Minister say that. We all know that the people of Greenland do not want to be ruled by America. But does he agree that just as those in Greenland should decide their own future, so should the Chagossians?
Mr. Speaker, I've made out my position on Greenland absolutely clear on Monday and a moment ago. President Trump deployed words on Chagos yesterday that were different to his previous words of welcome and support when I met him in the White House. He deployed those words yesterday for the express purpose of putting pressure on me and Britain in relation to my values and principles on the future of Greenland. Mr. Speaker, he wants me to yield on my position, and I'm not going to do so.
Well, I don't know about you, but I think that's the spikiest I've